Oh, Carla.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the program, Lou Prince, owner of Vintage Vinyl, a record shop in St. Louis, Missouri, and also a leader of the Business for Shared Prosperity Group. Going to be here talking about the hearing on the Consumer Protection Board that the president rolled out, that the Republicans kicked Elizabeth Warren back to Harvard over and are probably not going to appoint the replacement because they're adamantly opposed to consumers having some sort of protection. We're going to talk about that with him. And see, as what the Republicans have been saying is, if we have this consumer board, it's going to hurt small business. We're going to ask a small businessman what he thinks. Also in the second hour, Alan Charney, U.S. Action. He's the director of strategy and policy. Going to be talking about their move to ask the big online job centers monster, career builder, to actually have the people who advertise with them and work with them to hire some unemployed people. That'd be a good start. What we're finding across the country, a lot of employers not hiring the unemployed. In fact, it's one of the things that excludes some people. The resume says, oh, you've been unemployed for 6 months. Sorry, out of work. There's the door. Well, we're going to throw that one away. So it'll be interesting to talk to Alan about that. Also, Warren Fletcher, president of the United Teachers of Los Angeles, their union representing the 46,000 educators at the LA Unified School District. We'll talk about the charter school story that we talked about earlier in the week, about 50% turnover, 50% turnover in charter schools for teachers. And you go, you can't run a school district that way. There aren't enough teachers to churn through. So that'll be interesting to talk about, because as we move down the road with education, and our governor here wants to move more charter schools, wants to do the same thing. We want for-profit schools. We want to privatize the whole thing. Those wonderful golden ticket lottery tickets. These are things we should be talking about. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So the question I've got, as we move towards the debt day, the D-Day, if you will. Who's in charge of our government right now? Who's running things? I mean, to me, it just shows how completely dysfunctional our government has become, because we've elected people who don't believe in it. We've elected people who hate government. We've elected people who say what we should be doing is destroying and restraining. We want small, ineffective government. Because that's the argument. Whenever you hear someone, oh, I want less government, I want smaller government, what they're really telling you is, I want less effective government. I want ineffective government. I want a government so small that they're unable to solve the problems that the nation has, that the citizens have. And, on the other flip side of this, unable to stop or restrain big corporations. So basically the smaller argument, the smaller government argument is an argument for bigger corporations. Because at the end of the day, what happens is someone fills the power void. So if it's not we the people, if we through our government don't have the power to regulate, don't have the power to dictate the future, to have big ideas, building projects, race to the moon, highway systems, someone else will. And it will be corporations, and it will be for a profit, and you will pay heavily for it. So the question then becomes, who's in charge? And I look at the appearance this morning on one of MSNBC's TV shows by Grover Norquist, who, you know, when asked by Lawrence O'Donnell, you're saying that there's a situation where you do think default would be okay. And Norquist replied, yeah, it's possible. Because he's against raising taxes under any scenario. So if it means default, that's what it means. And I have to be honest, I go back to my days of high school where I learned about government, I learned about civics. It was always ingrained into you that the government can never go bankrupt. The government can never go broke as long as it has the ability to raise revenue through taxes, which is why you needed to be involved and active and educated and engaged in your government. Because, yeah, they can get out of hand with taxation. You could make the argument that the 1953 top marginal tax rate of 92% was a bit out of hand. But no one can argue, and I don't know any working class person who can argue that today's tax rates on the uber wealthy are too high. Now, Grover Norquist, the guy who's in charge here, the co-governor of Pennsylvania, I guess, he would argue that any tax, I think, is too high. And you look at what's been going on here with this stupid pledge that we can't seem to get any money out of the gas drillers because it would violate the pledge. Now what you've got is you've got Boehner who, you know, we talked about this last night. Boehner who said, you know, there's some T-twizzlers who, you know, want to see this go down. They want chaos because they think that they're going to get what they've been pushing for, which is a balanced budget amendment. It's not going to happen. So here tonight, as I understand it, as we sit here right now, the Boehner Amendment has been pushed off down the road. Not sure when they're going to do this. And even if it passes the House, it's not going to pass the Senate. And the other part of this is it's only a short-term thing. So, again, there's a lot of problems here. Even the Boehner plan is a bad one. And he's trying to deal with the T-twizzlers who are going to, I think, really have this apocalyptic view that, you know, one, nothing's going to happen, and two, if it does, maybe that's a great thing. It's scary, scary stuff, but I'll tell you what is happening. What is happening is the business community is kind of looking around going, holy dog, dude, Batman. They're serious. You know, I think at the beginning they thought that the Tea Party will come around. They're just making a little noise or rattling their sabers, you know, kind of pushing the envelope so that the Democrats will cave. Now here we are, close to the cliff, standing with our toes off the end and the ground from under us crumbling a little bit. They're getting worried. And I look at this report from Credit Suisse, who's saying that stocks could fall by as much as 30%. And our economy could contract by as much as 5% over the next 6 to 12 months. And there's a very significant risk of another recession. They're saying we're going to double dip. And when you're looking at this and you're going, what? You're going to let our economy that's just slowly digging out of misery, just slowly digging out of the worst crisis in most of our lifetimes, and now you're going to say, oh, gee, by the way, we're going to let it collapse. And even if we don't default, there are still massive, massive ramifications. And if we do default, it's going to harm the entire globe. But here's the other part of this. As this thing continues, and this is what Wall Street is hearing, as this goes down, as we continue down the road, stocks are already dropping, they're saying. And it's going to be, because of this, going to probably see about a 15% drop. So they're seeing this and they're going, wait a minute. We don't want another recession. We don't want another double dip. We don't want to see our stock prices going down. We've got it pretty good. We've got it great. Profits are up. You know, things are great. So why would we want to screw that up? So you see the chief executives from some of the nation's largest financial firms. Today, you know, they pressed on the White House and they pressed on Congress, saying, look, you folks, you guys need to make a deal. You need to get this debt ceiling and this package put forth. If you don't, their words, it would be very grave. Now, these are people, you know, Jamie Dimon from J.P. Morgan, Lloyd Blankenfein from Goldman Sachs, the head guy over at Bank of America. Now, look, these are people who know how to crash an economy. They've already done it. So they're telling us, look, if you continue this, you're going to crash an economy. Trust us, we know. And will they listen in Washington? No. They said in their letter, a default on our nation's obligations or a downgrade of America's credit rating would be a tremendous blow to business and investor confidence, raising interest rates for everyone who borrows, undermining the value of the dollar, and roiling stock and bond markets, and therefore dramatically worsening our nation's already difficult economic circumstances. And you look at this and you go, these are people who have already crashed the economy. They know. We should be listening to the experienced class. Now, there's some other people, the people who work in the financial markets. These are the banking people, bankers. They're saying, man, we've already crashed the economy once. Please don't do it. Now you got the people who do the financial management. The big boys like BlackRock and the Commonwealth Financial Network, like Mason, a whole bunch of these people. You've got Verizon who threw in with it and a whole bunch of things. The Teachers Retirement System of Texas, New Jersey Division of Investments for all these people who have said, you know what? Don't do it. You're going to kill us. And think about it from this way. If we see the stock market go down by 30%, how many people have 401ks? How many people have their investments tied up in Wall Street? So, you know, it's all fine, well, and good, you know, to be pushed from behind by these T-twits who are saying, yeah, we want to do it. Push it to the brink. Yeah. Think about when it hits you in the pocketbook. And I think this is what the Democrats understand, and they're working feverishly to stop it. But I do believe there are those 87 who, to their core, were put in there, they believe, by folks who hate government, and they are going to do whatever it is they can do to harm us. See, here's the reality. The reality is Wall Street knows times are great. Why screw that up? Corporate America knows times are great. They don't want the party to end. Corporate profits have not been any higher than they are right now since the 60s. They are thrilled. And you know what's even better for them? They're able to make more profit by stealing wages and benefits. They're happy. And now you see that BP released their profit numbers. $11 billion in the first quarter. $11 billion. You remember in the second quarter, they were disappointed. They got $5.6 billion. Now, Exxon has made their numbers happy, and the wildly wealthy should be extremely happy. Profits soared 41%. So BP's first quarter numbers, $11 billion, dropped a little bit down to $5.6 billion, but still a good number. Wall Street not happy, though. So Exxon should surely be happy, right? 41% profit. Not so much. Sorry, not enough for Wall Street. Wall Street wanted more. In fact, you know, Wall Street in their Exxon's refining operation wanted $2 billion. They only made $1.4 billion. Overall, 41%, $10.68 billion in profit. Wasn't enough. Their shares went up $2.18, but Wall Street wanted $2.33. See, it's never going to be enough for them. But what they do know is if we continue down this path, it's the end of their profits. They're never going to be able to borrow money any cheaper than they're borrowing it now. They're never going to be able to profit any more than they're profiting right now unless we pass those free trade agreements. Because you look at where all the money's going, and if profits are through the roof, highest that they've been since the 60s, highest profits we've had since the 1960s. And our, you think about this. If we've had these great profits, our corporate tax rate is so incredibly high, the highest in the world, why aren't we doing better? Why aren't the Treasury's coffers overflowing? Well, I think a good place to look, would be Microsoft. Microsoft just put out their fiscal, their numbers for their fiscal fourth quarter. $17.4 billion in sales, a 30% increase in after-tax profit. 35% gain in earnings. They reported $445 million in taxes. Just 7% of their $6.3 billion pre-tax profit. 7%. What'd they do with the other money? Well, of course, they stashed it overseas. And, of course, they've got some lucrative tax breaks. And you look at this and you go, well, why aren't they paying it? Because we keep giving them everything they want. And as we keep looking at these trade agreements and we keep looking at what's going on, we're seeing these companies offshoring their profits to places like Ireland or Puerto Rico or Singapore, and don't forget, coming up, Panama. Because in Ireland, they'll have to pay 12.5%. Singapore, anywhere from 0 to 17%. In Puerto Rico, who knows? They're all over the map. And you look at Microsoft. Their pre-tax profits overseas have nearly tripled in the past 6 years. Why? Because they're moving the profits overseas. And what we hear is we hear a bunch of the Republicans going, oh, well, gee, you know, we need to let those companies repatriate a bunch of that money. You know how much money Microsoft has overseas? Almost $30 billion. They're claiming that 68% of their overall income comes from foreign earnings. Think about that for a second. So all this money is overseas. And the Republicans are going, oh, we need to drop that tax rate down so that, you know, they can repatriate that money and put it to work here. No, what they're going to do is they're going to hand it out to their buddies. And how do they do it? They do it the same exact way that happens here in the state of Pennsylvania with the Delaware loophole. The exact same way. In Microsoft's case, one of the things they did is the only company-owned plant in the world that Microsoft has is a plant in Puerto Rico that makes about 80 million disks a year. And they charge through the nose for those disks, move all the profit there. You and I don't get to see it. It's a screw job from top to bottom. But all we're going to keep hearing is if we can repatriate that money, if we can bring that money back, they can put it to work. Not going to happen. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this. What do you think about this?
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Even as the debt ceiling confrontation edges the country closer to a possible default on the national debt, Republicans in Congress are putting more jobs in jeopardy by refusing to pass a routine measure to reauthorize the Federal Aviation Administration. The AFL-CIO says this refusal to act on FAA reauthorization is forcing the layoffs of thousands of FAA and construction workers This FAA disruption could also rob the government of $200 million a week in revenue used to maintain the nation's aviation infrastructure. Interfaith Worker Justice says a Republican House bill rammed through committee with less than 48 hours' notice is an unprecedented full-throttle attack on American workers. The bill, H.R. 2587 by Representative John Klein, lets companies retaliate against workers for exercising their rights to organize and collectively bargain by allowing companies to threaten to move jobs or to actually move them. Interfaith Worker Justice says the nation's religious community supports workers' rights to collectively bargain. A shift of tactics is underway as Infinity Rubber workers enter the 21st month of a lockout. Jesse Russell reports.
Workers at Infinity Rubber plants in Ontario started picket lines in 2009 to protest a contract proposal that included a wage cut of 25% and the slashing of benefits nearly in half. Since that walkout 20 months ago, the company has refused to negotiate, and those jobs have been filled by replacement workers. In a new campaign, the United Steelworkers will be seeking public pressure to get the company back to the bargaining table. One of the issues they're highlighting is the birth of Infinity. In 2009, Built Right Rubber was operating under bankruptcy protection. Built Right CEO James Chung organized a group of investors to acquire the assets of his bankrupt company for $14 million less than the actual value, and they launched the new company under the name Infinity. Chung, even with his history of driving Built Right into bankruptcy, was installed as CEO. Another issue is product quality. According to the USW, they've received reports from sympathetic truck drivers that loads of Infinity products produced by the replacement workers have been rejected due to poor quality.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
So, we're just a couple of days away from D-Day. What do you think's going to happen? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Let's go to the phones. I got John on line one. How you doing tonight, John?
Good. It's a very interesting conversation and observations because you're right. The government policies are basically destroying the U.S. currency. Their argument is we ruin the currency and we become more competitive around the world. And then there's certainly been, you know, from the Wall Street Journal and other things over the last couple of years, there's certainly been a push to move money offshore. There's certainly been a push to allow folks to take their profits and put them anywhere they want, not just in the U.S. And so at the end of the day, from a historical perspective, the only thing that this even resembles closely is Brazil of the early 80s, where they went so bankrupt, they had to get the rest of the world to forgive their debt. And it took them, what, 2 decades to recover?
Yeah, the difference here is Brazil didn't have the world's currency. They didn't have the reserve currency. The difference here is this is an extremely wealthy country. Brazil, not so much. You're talking about the most powerful economy in the history of civilization with the most wealth. The fact that we're even talking about defaulting is criminal in my mind.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, to your point, right now the only saving grace is we're the world's reserve currency. If we lose that by messing around like this, then we will become no better than a Brazil or a Japan whose currency means nothing around the world, and they're dependent on everybody else to set the benchmark. We've got to avoid falling into that trap.
Well, I mean, being the world's reserve currency is a double-edged sword. One, we get to spend like drunken sailors because people aren't going to walk away from us. But two, our currency is part of the reason that we have such a massive trade deficit and the reason that so many countries are holding dollars in reserve so they don't end up like Japan or Argentina in the past. They're holding these massive reserves over our heads. So it's a double-edged sword, John.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But what do you think about the repatriation? I mean, the Republicans are pushing this idea of letting the Microsofts and letting these big corporations who are funneling their profits to tax havens around the world to bring those back at a much lower tax rate in the hopes that, you know, they'll be the job creators.
Well, until Wall Street starts to reward companies for increasing their staff by 10% instead of rewarding them for decreasing their staff by 5%, you're never going to see that money repatriated.
Well, the money will come back. I think it'll just be divvied up like it was the last time among the Wall Street people. Excellent
right.
Observation.
Right. It won't go to the individuals that are going to really make this country grow going forward. The historical growth of the United States is the people growing with the country. When a small percentage of the country is growing the wealth and everybody else is struggling to get by, and it doesn't take a rocket science to say the published unemployment rate is not the real unemployment rate, and there's a bunch of government U-based unemployment figures that account for people so-called no longer looking for employment that have basically exhausted their benefits. So when the real unemployment rate is somewhere between 12 and 15%, you tend not to trust the government. So until we can get that flipped around and get the real unemployment rate down below 7%, we're going to have a real trouble. And as long as the businesses are making profits and Wall Street rewarding them for that and not for hiring people and reducing the unemployment rate, then we're going to have some challenges.
But wouldn't the argument then be, and help me if you differ, wouldn't the argument then be we should be raising taxes on these profits so that these companies reinvest in their business and continue to grow as we have done in the past?
To me, it comes down to a carrot. You got to find a tax incentive that rewards companies for hiring, not penalizing them.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you reward them for hiring, but you tax the profits. You have a higher tax on profit rates so that they reinvest in their business. They have a lower profit rate, obviously, but they're reinvesting in their business and they're growing larger.
And I think to get there, it can't just be a tax increase. There has to be some kind of offset to incent the hiring of people. And unfortunately, we don't have that right now.
Well, we tried a little bit of that, but you know, again, the Republicans thought a great idea would be to hand out tax cuts. And again, tax cuts are the absolute worst way to stimulate
the
economy.
Yeah, all you do, you hope back to the trickle-down economics that failed in the 80s, you hope that spurring this growth will improve jobs. And, you know, the original George Bush called that voodoo economics because it was proven to be voodoo.
And, yeah, but then he sold his soul to be vice president.
Yeah, I know. And, back in the 80s, Reagan built up the military, and essentially the military hiring got us out of that recession and gave the country enough time to recover the business side. Well, now we don't have the means to just go out and spend on the military like Reagan did to offset the unemployment, and we don't have... You know, frankly, we're overextended the military, so for foolish causes. So now when the folks are coming back, we don't have jobs for them, and then we're taking more crazy casualties now than we have in a long time.
Yeah.
So that's a burden for the military, family, and friends, as well as the government to rectify.
If I could just kind of tweak one thing you said about Reagan, his spending on the military was borrowed money. Understand it was our Social Security money, and people need to understand that he didn't stimulate the economy by creating jobs out of the thin blue. He did it through government stimulus by taking Social Security money and handing it out.
Right. So he used the dial that we don't have available to us now.
Exactly. Excellent.
Hey, it was great talking.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you.
And you know, he's spot on. I mean, the entire point. Where I would take that a little bit differently is, I do think you have to do something to entice business to hire. Having demand is a good way to do that. And I've said before, I think, you know, the green energy, movement, I think solar panels, wind turbines, I think the government being one of the largest procurement agencies in the world, buying things, we're going to buy 100,000 solar panels. Who's going to produce them? There's an awful lot of things that could be done, and our trade policy being one of them.
Well, I think Obama had some ideas, the blue green jobs you talked about, getting into, alternative energy, a possible look at another stimulus. You know, all those are now, they look very, very suspect. Because we're just, the way we're going, we just don't have the money. The sad part about it is we were finally slowly coming out of the depression. Now any progress that we've made, or quite a bit of it, we're going to take a step back, and that is just unconscionable. I don't know about you, Rick. I'm very pessimistic that we're going to get something done, because I'll tell you why. I heard a leader of the Tea Party movement, a national leader. You know what he said? He said, we are not part of the Republican Party in that we don't believe what they believe. We are going after 66 Republicans next year, and we are going after 66 Democrats. So for them, this is just a battle in the war, right?
Well, I mean, I think if you're looking at this, the people to blame are the Tea Party people. That whole recalcitrant movement, that whole, and I wouldn't even say movement, that whole well-funded direction that the Koch brothers and the very wealthy in this country have pushed down our throats, because, look, they took advantage of an angry time. People were ticked off. People were hurting. Foreclosures were through the roof. Unemployment was through the roof. People were upset. And, you know, they looked at this and said, you know, we need change. Now we've tried it, failed. Now let's go back to some rational thought and maybe start talking about how we move forward. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, you know, if the Republicans continue this hostage situation and they don't come up with a reasonable compromise, what bills do we pay on August 3rd and on August 4th and on August 5th? What would you pay? Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
The core economic problem we're facing today is that both unemployment and underemployment are rampant, stifling any hope for real recovery and threatening the very survival of our essential middle class. The solution? Our leaders in Washington and various state capitals are pushing a massive jobs program across America. Great! Just what we need! No. Unfortunately, theirs is not a program to create jobs, but a coordinated effort with corporate front groups to eliminate hundreds of thousands of public service jobs, adding these workers to America's jobless hordes. If ignorance is bliss, they must be ecstatic. They've swallowed the right-wing mythology that prosperity will magically arise if only government budgets can be gutted and the jobs of public employees terminated. Yet, by going on a firing rampage, they are shoving the entire U.S. economy back into the Great Recession. Or worse. This is because people who are out of work do not tend to be, how shall I put this, robust consumers. Since consumer spending accounts for about 70% of our country's economic growth, and in so doing, creates America's jobs, the dogma of deliberately destroying the purchasing power of middle-class wage earners is disastrous, like trying to cure a headache by chopping off your head. Not content to undercut middle-class consumers by firing them, extremist politicos are also slashing jobless payments, food stamps, Medicaid, and other safety net programs. These put money directly and quickly into the consumer economy as recipients spend for food, gas, and other basics. Such cutbacks will drain some $37 billion more out of our consumer spending this year. This is Jim Hightower saying, as our economy keeps sliding backwards, the middle-class people who get knocked down will be hunting these laissez-faire land ideologues with dogs.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
I was waiting for the auga. No auga. Where'd that go? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So that's the question. What if there's no deal? If the hostage situation continues, we go down to the deadline, we don't meet their ransom demands, which is basically kick granny to the curb and, cut all those people off of health care. If we don't take, formula and milk from children, what happens? What do you pay? As it stands right now, we've got a bill. Take this to your home economics if you have to. Your home bills are $306 billion every month. Every month. You just got a cut in your wages. You're only bringing home $172 billion a month. So somewhere you got to cut $134 billion. Where do you do that at? Do you kick granny to the curb? You can save almost $50 billion on Social Security every month, but then you're going to have some problems with your economy because that nearly $50 billion isn't going to go to food, isn't going to go to medicine, isn't going to go to paying the rent and the light bill because granny spends every penny that she gets. At least my grandmother does. Do we cut the $32 billion from defense spending? So all those people in the Middle East, do they get cut off? Are they just standing out there in the sand going, where do we go? I don't think that's such a great idea. Do we cut off paying the interest we owe on our debt, which is almost $30 billion? I don't think so, because that's called default. Then they come in and they move your furniture out and they take your house from you. Do we cut education? Heck, there are people arguing that the kids don't learn anything anymore. That's why we got libraries. Oh, wait a minute, we're going to cut that too. But if we got education, we got a bunch of dumb kids, we could save $20 billion a month. Only problem is that's not quite $134 billion, is it? So we got a long way to go. We could cut those workers. Yeah. We can go after their wages and their benefits. Yeah, we can stick it to them. Only problem, that's only $14 billion. Where's the other $120 billion going to come from? We could cut those lazy people off unemployment. That's what we'll do. They don't want to work anyway. This might get them off their lazy duffs. But here's the thing. That's only $13 billion. Still got to come up with $121 billion. So there's no single bullet here. There's nothing at all here. So where would you go? What do you cut? $134 billion a month. Health and Human Services, all those poor people, that's only $8 billion a month. That still leaves you with a whole lot more. $126 billion, where are you going to cut that from? Now, my T-Twizzler friends, they're saying, well, we should be cutting, we could cut Medicare, that's $50 billion. We could cut Social Security, that's $50 billion. All we got to do is come out with another $21 billion. We'll cut the Department of Education, we're there. Cut the Department of Education and Unemployment. We're done. We're right there, Jake. All done. Cut all those poor people programs.
Well, the Department of Education has always been, has always had a mark on as far as the conservatives. They always wanted to go after that and eliminate it. That's been their objective for a couple decades.
Yeah, I go back and I think about my friend Doug. And I talked about him the other night. I worked with him for a couple of years and, really is a super nice guy. Had a little gambling problem. Had a little problem with the ponies. In fact, I don't think in the years that I knew him, I don't think he ever made it through a Friday, without leaving early to go to the track. And he would end up invariably losing half of his paycheck, coming home and going, uh-oh, sorry, honey, we're not going to be able to pay the bills. And he had this little, one of those file boxes, like he used to put index cards in. He'd have his bills in there with a single dice or a die, and he would roll the die. And that's what he would pay his bills with.
Oh, my.
He goes, okay, well, these are the late ones. We're going to mark these 1 through 6, and we're going to see which ones we pay until we have no more money. And he called it his bill kitty. Is that what we're going to do? Is that how we're going to run our government? We're going to roll the dice and go, okay, Granny, you can eat this month, but not next month. And the thing that bothers me is if we do the Boehner thing, Boehner wants to raise the debt limit somewhere, I think it's $900 billion. And he wants to cut discretionary funding by more than that. I forget, $1.2 trillion, somewhere around there. We're right back doing this again in December. And I don't know anybody, can you imagine this at Christmas time? Do you want to be talking about this at Christmas time? And do you think making this an election year issue will make it any less contentious? Do you think we're going to be willing to make a deal or compromise our principles close to election time? No. So I can't even imagine why the T-Twits would want this. Because, you know, they're going to want to be able to pound their chest and say, I got something. And not be held accountable right before election. Because I got to imagine, if the election were this November, I think you'd see 87 T-Twits out on their ear. And no cookies, no party, no little twizzle stick, none of that. Just out. And what bothers me is the rest of the world is looking at us. And I know most people, I don't care what the rest of the world thinks of us. Well, we should, because, you know, we keep hearing that we're exceptional. We're superior. We're the world leader. People should follow us. I hear this stuff all the time, and I'm going, I agree with that. I'm like anybody else. I like to puff my chest out and say I'm number one. I like to be the guy everyone says, yes, that's who we shall follow. Look at what we're doing, man. Look at how dysfunctional we look. You know, people say that, you know, the American system of government has lasted 250-odd years. This isn't how it was set up. Is this what we want the rest of the world to emulate? I mean, I used to watch those clips of the South Koreans, which are hysterical. As they're beating each other up and they're throwing chairs at each other and they're just going ballistic. I'm waiting for that in our Congress. Only I don't think that they've got enough stones to do it. I think they're just petulant. I think they're children. And the reality is they're holding us hostage, these handful of people, this mere minor percentage, are holding this country hostage and the economy in their hands, and a fragile economy at that, where a 5% constriction, as the Wall Street people are saying is possible, is devastating to millions of families. Millions. How many people are harmed because of this? How many people die because of this? How many children go hungry because of this?
But no, for them, it's just, anyway, it's all about looking tough. It's all about, you know, we're in charge. We got principles. It's our ideology.
What about those kids? What about my grandmother? What about your grandmother? What about the services that we need? What about, I don't know, the FAA? What about rebuilding our infrastructure? What about the jobs that we've lost? What about all of that? Oh, that's right. All we care about is getting our way, like my two-year-old when she has a conniption fit. That's what we're seeing in Washington. They don't care about you or me. They care about themselves. And it's sad. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, Paul Brown, a Republican from Georgia, had some interesting comment, interesting analogy. We'll talk about when we get back, right back after this.
As long as my two hands are fit to use, I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
My name is Joe. Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Just when you thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alert.
So this Georgia Republican, he's being interviewed by Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC yesterday. Now Paul Braun's one of the big Tea Party favorites, one of the guys who's, you know, one of their heroes. I would assume they've got a picture of him on their wall. You know, kind of like kids used to have pictures of athletes on their wall, or the poster that I had of Farrah Fawcett Majors on my wall. And yes, I did have that. It was a great poster. It was one of those things that, you know, I think every teenage boy should have had growing up. But I'm assuming that's kind of what the Tea Party has done with this guy. He's one of their heroes. Never mind the Ten Commandments. That's hero worship. He's like a god to them. So she's interviewing him, and you almost gotta laugh when she's talking about lowering the debt ceiling and saying, you know, what should we be doing? And he comes out with really just a wonderful analogy.
Well, Andrea, the thing is, when someone is overextended and broke, they don't continue paying for expensive automobiles. They sell the expensive automobiles and buy a cheaper one. They don't continue paying for country club dues. They drop out of the country club.
So they take their expensive automobile and they sell it. And they drop out of the country club. And I got to ask you, where the hell does he live? Who are his friends? I don't know many people. I don't think I know anybody who has a really expensive car. Most people I know have mid-range, you know, your basic car that they couldn't sell down for. What if he didn't even have a car? I guess you go from having a poor car to no car in his world. I don't know anyone who belongs to a country club. So there's nothing to drop out of there. What that shows me is a total disconnect, a complete disconnect from reality, in that he thinks, well, it's just about It's just about, you know, you sell your car, you get a different one, you know, you drop out of the country club. It's not a choice between eating and not eating. It's not a choice between having a roof over your head and not having a roof over your head. That's not what he thinks this is about. But for a lot of people, the reality of what they're doing is just that. It's about either we're going to be able to put food on the table or we're not. We're going to be able to continue to live where we're living or we're not. But here again, these are folks who don't care. And Andrea Mitchell asked the question that I've already been saying, and I've been saying this for a while. She says, well, you guys have already passed this stuff. It's been signed. It's been appropriated. You know, the money should be there. You guys did this. He goes off on this. Listen to the response.
I've proposed over $7 billion worth of cuts in appropriations bills. And the thing is, the accounting gimmicks and the budgetary tricks that Barack Obama and Harry Reid have given us are just that. We can't have any more of that. We need to be truthful with American people. They deserve the truth. I'm voting for America. I'm voting for a strong economic future for America, for my kids and my grandkids. And I believe very firmly that we've got to deal with this debt. We cannot continue to create more and more. Actually, Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, have created more debt in the last Congress while I was here. I voted against all that stuff, the stimulus bill, which has been an abject failure, Bush's first tranche on TARP and Obama's second tranche. I disagree with all that. We've got to get headed in a good financial direction. And to do that, we have to deal with the debt. We cannot create more. We've got to start cutting across the board in every aspect of federal government, not only the discretionary spending, but the non-discretionary spending. We have to look at all of it. We have to have a whole different budgetary process here in Washington, in my opinion. And we've got to make huge cuts and send powers back to the states and people, leave dollars in the hands of job creators so that they can expand their businesses, yeah, buy inventory, and create a strong economy. And that's what I'm fighting for here in Washington.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there.
Yeah, let's leave it there. I mean, did he answer the question? Well, no. He rambled a whole bunch of talking points. It's Obama, it's Reid. I'm being truthful. I'm voting for America. I'm voting for children. Oh, Obama, Reid, and Pelosi did this. Stimulus bad. Give money back to the states. Oh, Obama, job creators. Ah! I mean, you know, the guy's a, well, he's a walking talking points memo guy. He's a walking slogan. And he still didn't answer the question. You guys did this. You guys appropriated all of this money. It's going to be spent. You guys passed the bills. The money should have been with it. You should have looked into the future and said, well, gee, we can't afford it now. You should have had those arguments back when you passed these bills. You know, those huge handouts to the very wealthy. When you did the Bush tax cuts, everybody told you, everybody said this was a bad idea. And it was. It was a horrible idea. When they decided they were going to hand out little checks and go, here you go, big checks for everybody, $300 a piece. It was a bad idea. But now that you've done all this spending and now we've done all this, now you want to take a stand? So, again, she asked the question. You know, you did this. And he has no response other than rambling, other than throwing out a bunch of talking points. And now what it's coming down to is it's coming down to who's going to pay. And you look at the conservative U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. They're going after Speaker Boehner. And his plan for its, quote, disproportionate cuts in essential services to poor persons. You look at what the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities points out. They say that Boehner's plan does not exempt programs like Medicaid and food stamps from the across-the-board cuts that they wanted. In fact, it does the opposite of exempting it, puts it right on the table. So now what we're doing is we're breaking 26 years of precedent of exempting the basic low-income entitlement programs like Medicaid, like Medicare, like WIC, like all of those programs that help the poor. What Boehner and the Republicans want to do, cut, gut, slash, and punish. And these are across-the-board cuts going to harm the lowest of low-income folks, and they think that's good. What it says to me, it says they've got screwed up priorities. It tells me that their morality is not quite what they tell us. What are the family values? Understand, we have done, we have exempted those basic programs for the last 26 years at least. And really, I guess we're in uncharted waters. Because since these programs have been passed, Congress has never done this before. They have not enacted a law with across-the-board cuts that go to the bone. They just haven't done it. And what you're seeing a lot of religious leaders asking is, you know, you guys are the party of Christianity. You're the party of throwing your religion out there. Well, what would Jesus cut? And that's an interesting question. Would he cut programs that feed the poor? Would he cut programs that put roofs over people's head? Would he cut programs that clothe people? You know, as I remember it, you know, look, you know, I wasn't the greatest Catholic in the world, but I had enough of it beaten into me to know that Christ talked about feed the poor, feed the hungry, help the poor, clothe the naked. Yeah, I remember Matthew 25. I've been through all of that. This is not the direction I think we should be going.
According to the Catholic Church, the Pope is the mouthpiece and the servant of God. And if you look at the papal encyclical papers, Rick, it talks about taking care of the poor. It talks about being against war. It talks about taking care of the less fortunate. It opposes the death penalty. And since we brought up the Catholic Church, it was amazing that part of the Catholic Church supported George Bush, mainly for one reason.
Abortion.
That was the abortion. But if you look at the papal encyclical, they actually much more agreed with the Democratic candidate in 2000 and 2004. But the conservatives in the United States had a lot of pull, unfortunately. But if you go back historically to the Catholic Church, I was glad to see this group, the conservative Catholic bishops, come out against this proposal. That's good to see, because they tend to favor on some issues of the Republicans. But this proposal by Boehner is so draconian that the Catholic Church, I don't think, had any other choice but to come out and say this is wrong.
I mean, you look even here at the state level. It's the exact same thing. It's easy to go. You know, they talked about tough choices, and I am so tired of hearing people talk about, well, they're tough choices. No. For Republicans to cut programs to the poor, for Republicans to cut programs to children, that is not, I'm sorry, that is not tough choices. Poor people weren't going to vote for you anyway. They know that. For the most part, low-income seniors weren't going to vote for you anyway. So it's easy to go after them. Tough choices would have been, you know what? We've got 400 people in this country who control a large portion of wealth. In fact, those 400 people control about the same wealth of about half of the people in this country. Maybe, just maybe, and I'm just throwing it out there, maybe we should ask them for some help. Because after all, this is the wealthiest country in the world. The problem is that wealth has been redistributed so well from you and me and the rest of the people who actually produce that wealth to the folks who sit on their yachts and drink margaritas waiting for the dividend checks to come in, that there's this massive gulf. And somehow, what's amazing to me is we've bought into it. Well, you know, they're worth, you know, that millionaire, that CEO should get $40 billion a year. Or that one should get $82 million a year. Or yes, those hedge fund managers who made the right bet, they should be able to make $1 billion a year and only pay 15% tax. Now look, I want people to make as much money as they can. I want everybody to be wealthy. But at the end of the day, if you live in a country where you've got people who are living in gated communities, flying around in private airports, in private planes, living on private islands, and you've got people who are starving in the streets, I got a little problem with that. Just kind of my morality, kind of my values. And I think what's happened is the right has co-opted those values to where everybody else is afraid to talk about them. I'm not. I value feeding people. I value making sure people have access to health care. Just a little thing I've got. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Lou Prince, owner of Vintage Vinyl, and one of the speakers for Business for Shared Prosperity. Right back after this.
We're going to take it anyhow. We want the hell with it.
right. The Rick Smith Show. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Even as the debt ceiling confrontation edges the country closer to a possible default on the national debt, Republicans in Congress are putting more jobs in jeopardy by refusing to pass a routine measure to reauthorize the Federal Aviation Administration. The AFL-CIO says this refusal to act on FAA reauthorization is forcing the layoffs of thousands of FAA and construction workers. This FAA disruption could also rob the government of $200 million a week in revenue used to maintain the nation's aviation infrastructure. Interfaith Worker Justice says a Republican House bill rammed through committee with less than 48 hours' notice is an unprecedented full-throttle attack on American workers. The bill, H.R. 2587, by Representative John Klein, lets companies retaliate against workers for exercising their rights to organize and collectively bargain by allowing companies to threaten to move jobs or to actually move them. Interfaith Worker Justice says the nation's religious community supports workers' rights to collectively bargain. A shift of tactics is underway as Infinity Rubber workers enter the 21st month of a lockout. Jesse Russell reports.
Workers at Infinity Rubber Plant in Ontario started picket lines in 2009 to protest a contract proposal that included a wage cut of 25% and the slashing of benefits nearly in half. Since that walkout 20 months ago, the company has refused to negotiate, and those jobs have been filled by replacement workers. In a new campaign, the United Steelworkers will be seeking public pressure to get the company back to the bargaining table. One of the issues they're highlighting is the birth of Infinity. In 2009, Built-Right Rubber was operating under bankruptcy protection. Built-Right CEO James Chung organized a group of investors to acquire the assets of his bankrupt company for $14 million less than the actual value, and they launched the new company under the name Infinity. Chung, even with his history of driving Built-Right into bankruptcy, was installed as CEO. Another issue is product quality. According to the USW, they've received reports from sympathetic truck drivers that loads of Infinity products produced by the replacement workers have been rejected due to poor quality.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Sit back. You got it, buddy. A large print given and a small print taken away. Sit back. You can sit back. You can sit back.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. And, you know, there's an interesting comment there. The large print giveth and the small print taketh away. A very apropos comment for our next guest. Lou Prince is the owner of Vintage Vinyl in St. Louis, Missouri. And he's also the leader in the Business for Shared Prosperity group. Businessforsharedprosperity.org is their website. Got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Lou, great to have you back on the program.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I appreciate you taking time for us. So this afternoon, the House Small Business Committee, the Subcommittee on Investigations, Oversight, and Regulations, they had a hearing, and basically my take on it was they were saying that this, this the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is going to kill small businesses. So I'm curious, is it going to kill them?
No, this is pure banking industry and credit industry propaganda. You know, I own a small business. A really small business. I have 20 employees, 8 of them are part-time. I have 24 and 8 are part-time. It's really a mom and pop in the sense that, you know, my business partner and I were buddies in college and we opened the store 32 years ago. And there's nothing there's no way that consumer protection as outlined in the Dodd-Frank bill and as instituted through the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau will hurt any legitimate small business.
I think the key there being legitimate.
Absolutely. It'll be hard on payday lenders, especially ones who prey on military families. It'll be hard on credit card companies that use deceptive practices. It'd be very hard on deceptive mortgage lenders. If this agency had existed 10 years ago, a lot of the mortgage loans that ended up causing the and being sold in credit default swaps that caused the huge crash in 2008 would never have been legal.
And, you know, I go back to that and I say, you know, had we not passed the bill in 99, the Graham-Leach-Bliley bill that basically undid all of Glass-Steagall, we wouldn't be in this mess. Instead of making banks gambling houses, we let them just be boring old banks where you may have your savings accounts and maybe a couple of other things. Had we left them alone, I think our economy would be fine today.
Absolutely. The separation, and the Dodd-Frank bill was not able to reintroduce that because the Republicans and the banking industry fought it so hard. But the original version of the Dodd-Frank bill, the one that created the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, also had that in the original language that would separate the trading companies in banks, you know, the stock and commodity and derivative trading companies from the banking. But they were not successful, and it's still something we ought to all be pushing our people in Congress to do.
No, absolutely, because, you know, I got to be honest with you. I don't know that I want an institution like a bank to also be in the gambling business. I understand the gambling mentality, and I was just talking about a friend of mine who had a gambling problem, and he had a little bill kitty where he had a die in his box where he'd, man, let's see what bill we're going to pay this month. So I understand that mentality where, hey, we're down a little bit, let's take some assets from over here to double down. I get that, and that's what's happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, and multiply that by the factor of it's not even their money, and they're going to end up making their money almost no matter what.
Right.
A lot of these places make their money actually on the transaction. You know, much like the casinos in Vegas, they get their part off the top.
Yeah, they get the VIG right off the top.
Exactly. And as we have seen, in years when they're recovering from the bad gambling years and profits show up, they end up skimming a huge amount of these profits in their own bonuses.
And what bothers me is, you know, you hear talk radio, you hear the news, you hear it on TV. Oh, this is going to harm small business. This is too much regulation. We need business to be flexible. And I'm going, yeah, on some level, but not Wall Street. Sorry.
And have you noticed they haven't actually shown any small business that it would harm? They've made up some stories about, oh, if your butcher has you on credit, he would have to fill out a bunch of forms, or you might. Which isn't really the truth. And the one industry that has historically, the one legitimate industry that has historically abused lending rules is the auto industry. And the Auto Retailers Association, the Auto Dealers Association, spent so much money lobbying Congress that they were exempted from this bill. So you still have to be really careful when you buy a car, especially a used car, what you're signing. But because of the areas in which the CFPB has jurisdiction, you will get very clear terms and very clear effects of your loan and very clear descriptions of when changes will occur and how they'll occur.
Right.
on anything you do with a lease, anytime you buy property, on your checking account, you know, all those hidden fees, they're going to all be shown up front now. Anytime you do any kind of financial advisory service, you're going to now know what it's costing you and what the financial company, your broker or your bank is making off it, and whether they have a financial interest in any of the elements that they're selling you.
Well, and that, it sounds like smart policy to me. And I think if you explain that to the majority of folks, I think most people would agree with you. And have you seen any polling on the popularity of the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau?
There hasn't been much. I remember back when the bill was originally up back in late in 2009, most people, it was like 3-1, in fact, in the most recent one I've seen. But back in 2009, most people didn't understand it. More recently, it's been about 75% in favor of consumer protection and this kind of bureau. And I think that is essentially a tribute to Elizabeth Warren, the Harvard scholar whose idea it really is. who has been the advisor to the administration in setting it up and who was supposed to be the first head of it, but who the Republicans basically made it impossible for her to be confirmed.
Well, I think they're going to make it impossible for anyone to be confirmed. Yeah, you could put Lloyd Blankenfein in charge of it, and they still wouldn't allow it.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy they got, though, the guy that the Obama administration got through, this guy Cordray, is a former attorney general of Ohio who was really famous for going after collection agencies, which is another thing that the new bureau oversees. And basically what this bureau is going to do with collection agencies is come up with standard forms so that when someone comes after you, you know what your rights are. And they're going to have to show you this form, which will tell you your rights.
Yeah. You know, one of the best things I think that they've done over time, there was the credit card bill, the card act or whatever it was, that on your bill it actually shows you, in very plain terms, if you make minimum payments for 12 years, this is what it's going to cost you. And it makes you take notice that, hey, this is real money.
Right. And anything that helps average ordinary people make good decisions with their money helps every small business in America, because it means that consumers have real money to spend and they're getting real value for their money. And to me, this is the basis of an economy. You know, one of the real strengths of our economy over the years, of our economic system here over the years, has been transparency. One of the real differences between us and most of the world is you really can see corporate documents. You really can get true financial statements from companies. That when companies like Enron blow up, usually they've lied on their financial statements or figured out ways around the law to hide their lies.
Yep.
In other countries, it's just not the case. You really can't get this stuff. And a lot of the strength of our economic system has to do a lot of the strength of the position of our economy in the world has to do with that. I mean, one of the reasons the American dollar is the international trade currency is because you know the actual value of it almost all the time, down to very, very small parts of a penny.
Yeah, and that, and we had just won the war, and the negotiators for the U.S. were dead set against Keynes' idea of the Bancor.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other discussion for another day.
Yeah, I was going to say, you want to get into that?
No, not really. Because had we gone down that path, we probably wouldn't have the massive trade deficits we have today, which I think is more concerning than our debt problems, the fact that we have this massive trade deficit. Let me ask you this, to kind of change the topic a little bit.
Sure.
You know, with this debt day coming up, the default day next Tuesday, what do you think this is going to do to folks like you, to small business owners?
Tell you exactly. This is like one of those incredibly strange moments where what is exactly what I was working on in my business today is affected by what's going on in Congress. I think the last time I talked to you was like last December. And at the time, we were trying to get a credit line for the business, and it was impossible. And I've got a 32-year-old business that's never missed a loan payment, all right? I finally got a bank to lend our company to set up a revolving credit line for $175,000, which is a huge amount of money to us. But it gives us really complete freedom to do our business really well and to do planning. And in order to get it done, I have to get some paperwork back from some of the record labels I deal with. Basically, I'm in the CD business.
Right.
And the last company, Warner Brothers, has been very slow getting the paperwork back. And what I found out today from my bank was what my rates are for this loan. And what the banker very carefully said to me was, but that may be really different after August 2nd. So I spent my entire day talking to credit managers at Warner Brothers, explaining to them that they needed to turn around this decision and get it through their lawyers before August 2nd in case Congress does something stupid, because it'll about double the price I pay for the money. I've got about a 7% loan, and the banker predicted it might get as high as 14.
And this
if
is the party Congress that's going to create jobs?
The debt ceiling.
And this is the party that's going to create jobs. I remember in November them telling me, boy, we're going to jobs. And this is what we've got.
Well, if they do, they're doing it backwards. Taking money out of the economy, any money you take out of the economy, including deficit reduction, is going to hurt the job creation cycle. Because the job creation cycle starts with the people who are working now, putting money into the economy, by buying stuff they need, by going to their, you know, their neighborhood businesses and shopping, and us employing people and creating the sort of velocity in that cycle. And this is not the time for deficit reduction. I'm sure your audience knows the lesson of 1937 when FDR got reelected, but was under a lot of pressure because America hadn't had budget deficits since the Civil War, and FDR had put a lot of people to work with the WPA and public works projects and created a deficit. And he tried to listen to the more conservative members of his party and the Republicans and caused another great dip in the economy in 37 by trying to balance the budget.
It's amazing.
Time to do it.
It's amazing how we just continue to make the same mistakes over and over and over again.
Well, and the other thing, the illogic of it is so complete. Right now, interest rates are unbelievably low. It's one of the reasons I was able to afford to get this loan. And that's when you borrow money, and especially you borrow money for long-term, large capital items.
Right.
And what America needs right now are large, long-term capital items. We have to repair our roadways. We got to create the infrastructure of broadband for our country. Our electricity delivery system is in shambles. And the education system is just in shambles and falling apart. And the real deficit that we're going to hand down to our kids, I got two kids in college right now, is an infrastructure that they're going to have to pay at way higher prices and at way higher interest rates in the future to repair. And that's the deficit that Republicans never talk about and that Democrats seem blind to. A lot of them, the ones who want to give back all of this instead of raising taxes on people who can afford it.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Lou Prince, I appreciate the time. Owner of Vintage Vinyl. VintageVinyl.com is the website if you want to buy any CDs or great albums. That's a great store online there for your use. And also he is the spokesperson for businessforsharedprosperity.org. Lou, it's always great talking to you. I appreciate your time, brother.
My pleasure, man.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Something as simple as rock and roll would save us all. Now who'd have thought, laughter all,
if it's rock and roll. Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
The core economic problem we're facing today is that both unemployment and underemployment are rampant, stifling any hope for real recovery and threatening the very survival of our essential middle class. The solution? Our leaders in Washington and various state capitals are pushing a massive jobs program across America. Great! Just what we need! No. Unfortunately, theirs is not a program to create jobs, but a coordinated effort with corporate front groups to eliminate hundreds of thousands of public service jobs, adding these workers to America's jobless hordes. If ignorance is bliss, they must be ecstatic. They've swallowed the right-wing mythology that prosperity will magically arise if only government budgets can be gutted and the jobs of public employees terminated. Yet, by going on a firing rampage, they are shoving the entire U.S. economy back into the Great Recession. Or worse. This is because people who are out of work do not tend to be, how shall I put this, robust consumers. Since consumer spending accounts for about 70% of our country's economic growth, and in so doing, creates America's jobs, the dogma of deliberately destroying the purchasing power of middle-class wage earners is disastrous, like trying to cure a headache by chopping off your head. Not content to undercut middle-class consumers by firing them, extremist politicos are also slashing jobless payments, food stamps, Medicaid, and other safety net programs. These put money directly and quickly into the consumer economy as recipients spend for food, gas, and other basics. Such cutbacks will drain some $37 billion more out of our consumer spending this year. This is Jim Hightower saying, as our economy keeps sliding backwards, the middle-class people who get knocked down will be hunting these laissez-fairyland ideologues with dogs.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
So I'm holding the pledge to America, where they say we're going to create jobs, 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 jobs. We're going to restore people's belief in Congress. We're going to restore the trust. We're going to reform Congress. We're going to make things better. We just heard a small business owner say, you know what? I better get my loan before the second of August, because it's going to double my rate. Double. You want to talk about something that's going to kill small businesses? The fact that they can't get a line of credit? The elasticity that every business on this planet virtually needs to exist between the time when they produce their product and the time they sell it, so that they can pay their employees during that gap between production and sale? That elasticity that every business needs. The Republicans are now on the verge of snapping back. And this, they tell us, is going to create jobs. This, they tell us, is the way we should be going. And I'm telling you, folks, been saying this for a while. We default on our loans. We continue down this path. I guarantee you interest rates go up. And what does that mean? That means massive unemployment. Because that means most businesses can no longer afford to hire people. You know, I don't care what business you work for. They don't have a big pile of money sitting in their bank account waiting to pay you. Most of that money is borrowed money. Most of that money is a credit account that they pull from. And, hey, you know, when sales come in, they pay it back. That's how business works. And I think the Republicans who keep telling us that they're the business people, I think they've forgotten that. And I listened to Lou Prince, man, and, you know, if that loan that he's going to get at 7% goes to 14%, he can't afford that loan, which means that he can't expand his business, which means that he can't hire new people. In fact, I would argue that if he can't get that loan, he'll probably end up laying people off. Is that what we want? I mean, really, right now, borrowing money has never been cheaper. And I think Lou is spot on. There's the opportunity to invest in roads, in bridges, in infrastructure, in airports. There's an opportunity to invest in education. The question is, are we doing that? And you look at what the Republicans are doing right now, what they've already done. Never mind the hostage situation next week. What about the hostage situation that's ongoing and the ransom hasn't been paid, but you know what? The negatives are piling up. The fact that they haven't reauthorized the money to build on our airports and to oversee the airline industry. No more money for the FAA. Shut down. 4,000 FAA employees gone. Some 90,000 more workers unemployed because those projects that they were doing at those airports, money's gone. And you know there's something seriously wrong when someone like West Virginia Senator Jay Rockefeller is a champion of working people. He stands up and he says, I wish I understood why the policy objections of one company, Delta Airline, matter more than the livelihoods of thousands of people. He said on the Senate floor, last year the CEO of Delta made $9 million. Delta paid its top executives almost $20 million, yet it is fighting to make sure that its employees cannot organize for the fear that they may secure a few extra dollars in their paycheck. At the same time, he says, it is pushing for special interest provisions in the FAA bill. Delta announced it was abandoning air service to 26 small rural communities, leaving many of them without air service. He goes on to say Delta then had the gall to announce publicly it would seek EAS subsidies to continue the service. He says maybe Mr. Anderson and his colleagues would forego some of their salaries to help subsidize this air service. Maybe they could use some of the millions of dollars that they're collecting in a tax windfall because, you know what,
We're not collecting taxes either because the FAA has been shut down. Maybe to use that windfall money to pay for the service. He says their actions are shameful. And then he follows it up by saying, let me be clear. House Republicans and their Senate allies have thrown nearly 4,000 FAA employees out of work, stopped critical airport safety projects, hurt hundreds of small businesses, and gutted the Aviation Trust Fund. All so that Delta Airlines doesn't have to allow its employees to organize in a fair and timely manner. Now, this is Jay Rockefeller, not someone I would call a labor activist. And he says, you know, the needs of one company should not dictate the safety and soundness of our aviation system. And you know, he's right. We do need to get back to building those critical infrastructure improvements that have been stopped. And you've even got, right now, you've got Ray LaHood, a Republican, the transportation secretary, saying, you know what, we need to pass this. We need to get those folks back to work. We need to get those projects done. All because you've got these Republicans who've got their fingers in their ears and kicking their feet and screaming and wagging their tongues. And you know what really bugs me about this whole thing? Have you seen the ticket prices come down any? No. In fact, they actually raised their prices. Why? More profit. And I'm angry and I'm frustrated on so many levels over this, Jake, that we have a party in this country, and I've been saying it, why in the hell would you vote for somebody who doesn't believe in the power of government, who doesn't believe in what they're doing? Why would you vote for someone like that?
Well, they keep the Tea Party keeps saying they have this mandate, and I kind of chuckle. I mean, the truth is there were so many people that were disillusioned that the voter turnouts, especially in this state, were very low. And this is what you get. When people don't vote, the minority opinion can win out, and that's exactly what happened. This was a reaction. This was a reaction. They were disappointed in Obama, didn't show up, and now we have a bunch of radicals who have time and time and time again, this is a classic example, their political philosophy means more than the very future of the country, which has allowed them to be successful.
So again, how is all this creating any jobs? How is anyone, I mean, really, I'm looking at the pledge, a pledge to America, 21 pages of nice flowery language, accompanied with 27 pages of smiling white people. Where are the jobs? Where are the jobs, Boehner? I just heard a small businessman tell me that if the debt ceiling is not passed, that his loan will double. The cost of him borrowing money will double. How is that going to create jobs? Does anybody have a clue on that? I've yet to hear a Republican say that all they have is their talking points. Well, we got to get our house in order. Oh, we're going to benefit for our children. Well, I'm going to vote for, I love America. I love apple pie. I love puppies. I love laughing babies. When the reality is what we're leaving our children is a broken infrastructure. What we're leaving our children is an education system that is on its way downward because we're not investing in it. That's what we're leaving them. A healthcare system that is rife with profit and greed and declining in service. I mean, there was a story this week, guy decided that he couldn't wait any longer for a hernia operation, took a butter knife to his own stomach, cut himself open. Because he couldn't wait any longer. And this is the system that's the best in the world. This is the best we can do. This is the best the smartest, brightest, most intelligent people on the planet can come up with. We got a listener in South Carolina who's got a tumor. Doesn't have health insurance, so he has no help. Is this the best we can do? Is this the best as a nation? I sure hope not. I sure hope not. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back,
you know I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watched you do it all the time.
The Rick
Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make regulation happen!
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, if you missed any portion of the program, you can download our podcast right there. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can get the Stitcher app. You know, we've been talking about some of the hiring practices going on. And earlier in the week, we talked about the National Employment Law Project, talking about the jobs that are coming out. The jobs that are there are basically the bottom rung. And as you move up the ladder, less and less and less. Also, they came out with a report on the fact that the unemployed are just not being hired. And, you know, it's one of the things that they're, one of the criteria they're using, to, I guess, to weed people out. And it should stop. And that's why the folks over at USA Action are launching an online campaign to end hiring discrimination against the jobless. Here to talk to us about that is USA Action Director of Strategy and Policy, Alan Charney. Alan, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I look at this and, you know, most people would say, well, you know, the unemployed should be the first hired. Why aren't we seeing that?
Well, I mean, we were as surprised as anyone when we learned from the National Employment Law Project that there seems to be this pattern emerging that companies are hiring, but in their ads, they are putting explicit notices in that they don't want currently unemployed people to apply for the jobs. I mean, it's the ultimate kind of irony, considering we're facing the highest levels of unemployment since the Great Depression. For the longest periods of time, we have the most long-term unemployed that we've ever had since the Great Depression. One would think that the best way to solve the problem of unemployment would be to employ those who are unemployed, but it looks like many companies don't see it that way.
Yeah, so we
just decided to take some action to put some pressure, in this case, on some of the big online job sites, Monster.com and CareerBuilders.com, who are allowing some of these ads to be on their sites and see if we can reverse the discriminatory practice.
Well, absolutely. And shouldn't this be something that the states should be taking up? I know here in Pennsylvania, you know, the corporate governor here said there are all these unemployed people and their jobs that are out there. And from what you're telling me, if they're unemployed, the jobs, they're not going to get them anyway.
I know. It really is unbelievable. I mean, when we tell people this first, they're incredulous because they figure, They just don't figure that how this is possible. NELP did a National Employment Law Project did a poll, and 80% of the respondents in that poll felt that this was a very unfair practice. There is national legislation that's sponsored by Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut and Hank Johnson from Georgia, called the Fair Employment Opportunity Act, that would outlaw this kind of discrimination. Unfortunately, given the current makeup of the House of Representatives, it probably won't pass there. But the fact is there's more and more awareness on the part of legislators about these practices, and I suspect that there'll be bills that will emerge in state legislatures to ban these practices. There was one that was passed in New Jersey just recently, for example, even with a Republican governor.
Well, you know, I look at this, and then when I read your press release, you know, I was going, well, I can see to a degree an employer gets a whole bunch of resumes in, and, you know, as a way of kind of narrowing it down, maybe you get rid of some of the people who have been unemployed for the longest time for some bizarre reason one way or another. But what you're saying in this press release is that even in the ads, it's openly discriminatory right in the ad.
Right. That's the most egregious part of it. I mean, if you're an employer and you don't want to hire the long-term unemployed, well, you just look at the resume and you could tell who's been employed and who's been unemployed, and you can weed people out that way. That of course, in and of itself is a bad practice, but there's probably nothing we can do about that. But here, they're brazenly putting it in ads, which is an indication of kind of like the attitude that corporate America and corporate management has toward the economic crisis that millions of people are facing. They don't seem to feel any moral or economic obligation to hire the unemployed and to create more earning power among more workers in America that eventually will allow people to increase their standard of living, and more importantly will create more consumers who will consume more and create more profits for the corporations. They seem to have forgotten the basic fact that when people are working and they're being paid for their work, the corporations are better off as well.
But even beyond that, Alan, just the fact, as an employer myself, if I see somebody who's unemployed, I'm going to give them an opportunity. There's going to be, correct me if I'm wrong, but some massive amount of loyalty to me and gratitude that this person's going to come in and really do a good job for me.
Well, I've talked to a lot of people who've been long-term unemployed because we work with them and mobilize them around the fight to get and unemployment benefits and so on. And yes, indeed, they're desperate for work. They're trying hard to find work, and they would be tremendously loyal and great workers. There's no question about that.
So, you know, it's mind-boggling that you see not only the veiled discrimination, but this blatant right out in front of us. So I guess the question then becomes, much like the Boeing situation, where Boeing said, we're moving to South Carolina, no more strikes, don't have to worry about that. The question then is have businesses gotten the mindset that our labor laws are so broken and that they have so much control they can do whatever they want?
Well, unfortunately, you're right. And unfortunately, corporate America, especially the large multinational corporations, are caring less and less about the welfare of working people in this country because they make their profits globally and not just in the domestic market. And their facilities are located globally as well. So their mindset is international. And our workers, American people, are located in this country, and we're suffering from this fundamental disconnect between how the corporations think of production and profits and how working people in this country think about jobs and income and security for their families, and we're the situation just gets worse and worse every year.
Yeah, I mean, the reality in all this, and I go back to my roots in the labor movement. I go back to the fact that I was a Teamster for more than 20 years. When I first started working, I went to the union, and they had a hiring hall. You did day work for them, so you always had some work. And for me, as corporate America has destroyed labor, has destroyed the right to organize and to join unions, we have seen this kind of egregious violation of the already weakened and broken labor law structure that we have in this country.
Absolutely. And it's labor law with regard to the unions, and then just fair labor and standards law for all workers as well. I mean, let's take a specific example. You mentioned it earlier. The fact that, you know, there are 14 million people currently unemployed, another probably 7 to 8 million who are underemployed, who would like to be fully employed but aren't. We know that when people lose their jobs and then get rehired, the high probability is they're getting rehired in a job which is paying considerably less and has considerably less benefits than the job they previously had. So what's happening is that over time, there's this leveling downward of wages and benefits, and which hurts working people and hurts our economy and hurts the ability of our government to be able to provide, you know, fundamental programs and services for people. One of the reasons that we're having the fight in Washington we're having now is because of the recession and because of the taxes that the unemployed are not paying because they're not working.
So let me ask you this. You know, we keep hearing the Republicans, and you know, I was just reading again through the Grand Pledge to America that the Republicans ran on in November of 2010, where they promised they were going to create jobs, they're going to create millions of them. Are there any incentives for people to hire folks? You know, are there incentives to hire the unemployed? Have we gone down that road? Have we looked at any of that?
Well, there were a few incentive programs in the Recovery Act of 2009. Unfortunately, those are winding down, but there's no massive incentive program for the private sector to hire. History has shown that these programs are very difficult to enforce properly, and many times have been abused by corporations where they, at the state level, particular state legislatures have passed laws which have given tax breaks to companies if they create jobs, and it's been discovered after the fact that most of the jobs that were created were jobs that would have been created anyway. So basically they got a tax break for not really creating new jobs above and beyond what they would have done. It's not easy to do. Quite frankly, corporate America right now is sitting on more cash than it's ever had in its possession before, about $2 trillion in cash that they're holding in banks. Consumer demand is down, of course. But more importantly, productivity is up tremendously. Productivity is up. Benefits are not going to the workers. The productivity is basically allowing the corporations to continue producing what they're producing without hiring more workers. Yep. It's a trend that's very dangerous for the welfare of working people in this country. And when you combine that with the shipping of jobs overseas and the outsourcing that's taking place, it means that we're facing at this point a new normal, a level of joblessness and underemployment that's basically twice as high as historically we've had in this country. Well, and it's gonna have devastating impact, not just directly on families that are suffering because they one or more members is unemployed or underemployed, but it's going to have that disastrous impact on the economy as a whole.
Absolutely. I've always been a fan of the reality is I've been a fan of government being the one that spurs demand and saying, you know what, we're going to buy a million solar panels. Who's going to put it out there? And saying, you know, get people back to work that way.
Well, it worked in the Great Depression with the New Deal. That's where a lot of this stuff was invented. The irony of the situation is it works today. We just have to do it. Unfortunately, we now have a situation in Washington with a kind of resurgent right-wing Republican majority in the House and then a stronger Republican minority in the Senate that's blocking any possible efforts to have the government play a positive role to keep this economic recovery moving in a positive direction instead of moving in a negative direction, which it seems to be moving in now.
Yeah, and the closer we get to the end of the debt default day, the worse it's going to be. We just talked to a small businessman who said, "Look, if we default, the cost of me getting a loan is going to double. He's not going to be able to hire people. He's not going to probably keep the employees he's got. So what
right.
you end
well,
up is with more unemployed."
Absolutely right. This debt ceiling fight is it would be if for some reason some kind of deal can't be reached by August 2nd or early in August. I mean, this is basically this is a deliberate man-made disaster by the Republican right wing.
Absolutely.
And we're going to have to really make that clear to the American people.
So let's pull this back. You've got this action going on, this online campaign to end hiring discrimination. How can folks help? I know you've got the website, US Action.org. We've got a link on our site at thericksmithshow.com. What can our listeners do?
Well, the best thing to do is to sign the petition and then move it around. Get your friends to sign it, your colleagues at work to sign it, get other websites to put it up. The key thing now is to build as much pressure on Monster.com and CareerBuilders.com to show that tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Americans are opposed to these discriminatory practices. We believe that this is going to move virally. It's something that is really sort of has really kind of like touched the nerve. We've just seen in the last week a lot of press on this, the New York Times, NPR, the Times has even had an editorial about this. So we believe that this is a moment. People are very frustrated that jobs aren't to be created. They want to do something about it. This is a small thing that people can do to help the unemployed and the underemployed, and at the same time, really kind of build awareness about the jobs crisis and the need for deeper and bolder action than this. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg.
And it's going to take this kind of organizing. It's going to take this kind of – I've been calling for people out in the streets. I've been calling for people to get out there and scream, holler, carry on. We need another Coxie's Army. We need folks going to Washington. I'd love to see a million unemployed folks taken to the Capitol saying, you know what? We're not moving until we can find a job.
Well, I support that 100%, and we're always working to make that happen, and maybe this could be one of the sparks that makes it happen. And I'm glad you mentioned Coxley's Army. I mean, I haven't heard anyone talk about that because it's before my time. But yes, we've had other experiences in the past in this country where the unemployed have really risen up in significant numbers and demanded relief and demanded job creation, and it's one of the reasons why Roosevelt was able to move the kind of New Deal program that he moved to create millions of jobs for people who are out of work.
Yeah, well, the hope is that this president, it's not too late for him. Again, the website, usaction.org. I encourage everyone to go over, sign the petition, stand up, help out the unemployed, and this is just egregious. Alan Charney, I appreciate your time, brother. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated, professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
With the PSECU Home Equity Line of Credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer is a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing Light is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Party, lights, and photos too. We'll share the finest tea and dance.
so last night we were talking to Scott Kies from Think Progress, and we were talking about the Tea Party rally that they had. And again, I felt sorry. I almost felt sorry for Jim DeMint, because he's up there on the little platform that they had with the little podium, and there are like a handful of people that he's talking to. It looked like there were more media people there than there were actually tea twits. And I said, you know, the reason that they didn't come is there are no cookies. So it turns out today, Michelle Bachmann at the press club got little tea party cookies, cute little teapots, little teacups with little, you know, dots on them. Oh, so cute. You know, I personally would have thought if it were me doing it, and if I had bought into this whole tea twit mentality, I'd have put the American flag on the teapot because that's, you know, and the Constitution, you know, maybe some hair or something. Yeah, look at that. Beautiful, beautiful little teapots and cookies. We're going to put that on our Facebook page at the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk over on Facebook. The Borowitz Report today showing its impatience with the debt ceiling stalemate in Washington. China today took the extraordinary step of putting the United States of America on eBay. Officials at the online auction site said they believe it was the first time a major Western nation had been listed for sale there, if you don't count Greece, they said. In Beijing, the Chinese finance minister said that it had considered waiting until August 2nd to see if the U.S. would ever pay back its multi-trillion dollar obligation, but ultimately decided to cut its losses. The Chinese minister said, "We think we'll attract a buyer on eBay. We say what you want, but you know, the U.S. is still one of the top 50 countries in the world." The sale listed for the U.S. contains some interesting information, such as China's description of the former superpower being in fair to average condition. The listing also includes the stipulation government sold separately, which the finance minister took great pains to explain. He's saying, "We thought that including the government in the sale might turn off potential buyers. Plus, the U.S. government isn't ours to sell anyway. It's owned by the Koch brothers." With no bidders in the first 24 hours on eBay, China admitted that it would be challenging to unload the U.S., but it still held out hopes a buyer would step forward, saying, "We've got our fingers crossed for Zuckerberg." At a White House press conference, Press Secretary Jay Carney said that he understood China's decision to sell the U.S., but warned that a buyer would have to turn up on eBay before August 2nd. After that, the Internet gets shut off. So there you go. The Borowitz Report. And, you know, while it's tongue-in-cheek, the one point in the whole thing is the observation that we are in fair-to-average condition. And you look around, you look at the roads, the bridges, the infrastructure, you look at what, you know, the engineers are saying, the civil engineer people are saying, D and F. You got to wonder, Jake. You got to wonder.
You just wonder when people are going to start dying, Rick. I mean, we saw some of it out in Minnesota, that tragic accident. And you just wonder when these are really going to, I mean, we keep saying, look, this is an emergency, and you wonder when it's going to actually happen.
I've been waiting for this to happen. I've been waiting for somebody, and thank goodness there was actually a crack ABC News reporter at the Gingrich press conference. So Gingrich is in Atlanta yesterday. And he's doing his little, you know, his whole little shtick. Hey, we're having a slapping on the back, shaking hands, you know, giving out free T-shirts, the whole nine yards. So this ABC producer goes, you know, Mr. Gingrich, would you show us, hold up one of the T-shirts? So like the doofus that he is, he pulls the T-shirt up to him, and he's got it on there, Gingrich 2012. And then she hits him with, do you know where that was made? And
let
oops,
me guess, China.
It was made in El Salvador. Now understand, this is one of the guys who has really been beating the president up about manufacturing, about, you know, being an American. So here's this guy who his campaign T-shirts made in El Salvador. Now, they were printed in Atlanta, and this is how he played it off by saying, well, you know, it was an intern, or it was a volunteer. Volunteer did it. You know, you can't control those volunteers. And basically saying I had no control over it. So I'm asking the question, is this the guy we want for president? Somebody who evidently doesn't know, couldn't put out the dictate that all of our campaign stuff should be made in America? Just like I beat up, and look, I'm an equal opportunity beater-upper on this. The president did the same thing. You may remember, Jake, the census came out with their hats and their coffee mugs made in China, and I beat him up for months over it. And this is another example where we need to beat these people up. But Gingrich, if you remember back during his CPAC speech, the Conservative Political Action Conference, he claimed that the Obama administration is anti-jobs, anti-small business, anti-manufacturing. Sorry, your party's the one who's holding the country hostage, so small businesses are going to pay twice as much for their loans. So I would say that's anti-small business, and all those small businesses are not going to be able to get loans. They're going to have to lay off people. So kind of guessing you're the party of the anti-job thing. And manufacturing, do we really want to talk about the Reagan years? Do we really want to talk about the high-dollar policy that sent millions of American manufacturing jobs overseas? I don't think so. And look, I'm the first one to admit Clinton screwed up royally with the NAFTA, which, again, was conceived under the Reagan administration, went through the whole gestation process under H.W. Bush, and was birthed under Clinton. And again, we had the chance to keep him out. We had the chance to get somebody better, but we didn't. And we had the chance to stop it, but we didn't. And I'm telling you right now, we've got the chance to stop these free trade agreements, which I think are horrible. But will we? And I go back to that census thing, man. All the millions of, at a time when we needed jobs and you couldn't get hats and mugs and pens and all that stuff made here?
Not only made here as i.e. in the United States, but right here in Pennsylvania, my God. I sat in a meeting where you had people coming in from the Census Bureau, and a bunch of us brought up that question, and his answer was, he doesn't know why. Somebody made a buck that had the right connections, but sad. I mean, here's the U.S. government. U.S. government buying insignias for the census made in China. I mean, think about that.
And you can only blame Walmart so much. And the story today about Walmart, evidently Walmart has bought into a big company in South Africa, Massmart, paid $2.4 billion for 51% stake in this Massmart. But what's going on over there, the South African unions and three government departments are opposing it, saying, you know what, and I love this part, they said it's going to squeeze local manufacturers and it's going to spark job cuts. The South Africans get it. Why don't we get it? They know that Walmart comes to town, it's all over. But here's the thing. Walmart's going to be in 14 African markets. They're the head of the UNI Global Union, Philip Jennings, says we have an anti-Walmart alliance of unions globally. Now we will have an African branch of the alliance. And they're trying to keep them out because they understand what Walmart does. It's all about export model, how cheap we can get things manufactured. It's about competing countries against each other. I would say, you know, aside from our insane trade policies, Walmart's been the cause of a big portion of our outsourcing. But that's just my opinion. I would then argue that all of the big box retailers have been that, which is why you have folks like Target pushing for trade agreements. It's going to come down to us, though. At some point, we've got to wake up and we've got to vote for people who, one, believe that government has the power to do good in people's lives and that government has the ability to regulate commerce and has the ability to regulate big business and promote trade policies that are going to be good for us as well as the other side. What we've got right now, one-sided trade policies where all of the wealth going to the very, very wealthy. We'll take a quick break. We're going to come back with Warren Fletcher, president of the United Teachers Union in Los Angeles. He represents some 46,000 teachers in the L.A. Unified School District. We're right back after this.
The Rick Smith Smith Show, changing America for the better. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Even as the debt ceiling confrontation edges the country closer to a possible default on the national debt, Republicans in Congress are putting more jobs in jeopardy by refusing to pass a routine measure to reauthorize the Federal Aviation Administration. The AFL-CIO says this refusal to act on FAA reauthorization is forcing the layoffs of thousands of FAA and construction workers. This FAA disruption could also rob the government of $200 million a week in revenue used to maintain the nation's aviation infrastructure. Interfaith Worker Justice says a Republican House bill rammed through committee with less than 48 hours' notice is an unprecedented full-throttle attack on American workers. The bill, H.R. 2587 by Representative John Klein, lets companies retaliate against workers for exercising their rights to organize and collectively bargain by allowing companies to threaten to move jobs or to actually move them. Interfaith Worker Justice says the nation's religious community supports workers' rights to collectively bargain. A shift of tactics is underway as Infinity Rubber workers enter the 21st month of a lockout. Jesse Russell reports.
Workers at Infinity Rubber plants in Ontario started picket lines in 2009 to protest a contract proposal that included a wage cut of 25% and the slashing of benefits nearly in half. Since that walkout 20 months ago, the company has refused to negotiate, and those jobs have been filled by replacement workers. In a new campaign, the United Steelworkers will be seeking public pressure to get the company back to the bargaining table. One of the issues they're highlighting is the birth of Infinity. In 2009, Built Right Rubber was operating under bankruptcy protection. Built Right CEO James Chung organized a group of investors to acquire the assets of his bankrupt company for $14 million less than the actual value, and they launched the new company under the name Infinity. Chung, even with his history of driving Built Right into bankruptcy, was installed as CEO. Another issue is product quality. According to the USW, they've received reports from sympathetic truck drivers that loads of Infinity products produced by the replacement workers have been rejected due to poor quality.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
I work for the state now, helping kids with disabilities. I love the work, make the rules for bosses and you would believe. We had layoffs again this morning. I got my children now that I can see. Parents are angry, how can I blame them? They end up blaming me. When did I become a problem? How did folk become all mine? The governor says, tighten their belt. The only one that's tightening is mine.
Now, every time I hear that, I think of our governor here in Pennsylvania, Tom Corporate. The reality is, you know, they didn't make any tough choices with the budget. They went after the easy targets, the poor, the elderly, the children. That seems to be what's going on across the country, especially when you're talking about folks who want to privatize education like they want to do here with these insane vouchers. And for me, again, the thought is that they don't have any other ideas on how we fix, the handful of schools that are struggling. The rest of the system's doing just fine. There's a handful that need some help. And the question should be then, how do you fix those? There's been this push towards charter schools. And I look at this article in Los Angeles where 50% turnover rate. I'm going, how can you sustain a district? How can you educate children when half of your teachers are leaving? That's why I've asked Warren Fletcher, president of the United Teachers Los Angeles Union, to come talk to us. He's from the L.A. Unified School District. Warren, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi there.
Good to be here.
Yeah, I'm looking at this article that was in the LA Times, 50% turnover. And as I read through it, the one glaring thing that popped out at me is not one of these teachers said, you know what, we should have some representation so that we're not working 80, 90 hours a week.
Well, you know, out here in Los Angeles, and we're the we have more charter schools and more students in charter schools than any district in America. The district with the highest percentage is New Orleans, but for sheer numbers, we have the most in the United States. And because of that, we've had a lot of the teachers at the charter schools have come to us at UTLA because they've realized that they're not going to be able to survive. They're not going to be able to actually practice their profession in a quality way unless they have a union protecting them.
It's an unsustainable model, I got to be honest.
Absolutely. And it depends on what you call unsustainable. You know, I'm a teacher. It's a profession, and we're looking at what's happening to teachers. Through charter schools and badly run charter schools. There's some good ones out there, I have to say. But what happened to nursing back in the '80s is they figured they could kind of de-skill it, turn it into less of a profession. They could just sort of cycle people through and through and through and have nobody ever make it a lifelong profession.
Yep.
That didn't work, and it's not going to work in teaching either, but that's what a lot of the thrust is.
Yeah, I've been saying that for the longest time, that they've been trying to industrialize education where children aren't individuals. They're just another thing on the assembly line where these are empty vessels that we pour all this information in, and it's just stamp them out as quickly as possible.
Well, you know, and I would say, yeah, we pour knowledge, we pour information, but the goal is to move it into pouring training into children. The idea isn't to make well-rounded citizens. The idea is to have children who are good, obedient employees when they get out of school.
I mean, to take the George Carlin frame, yeah, all they want are people smart enough to push the buttons but not smart enough to ask why.
Exactly correct. And, you know, you talked about the report. You talked about the study. There are charter schools. I would remind you that you do know that unions invented charter schools.
Sure.
We invented charter schools as a way to have a place where we could take the most challenging students, the absolute most challenging students who have the greatest needs. We could have freedom as to how we taught them. We could experiment, see what worked, and things that worked, we could export that stuff back to the main school districts. But sadly, charter schools have, at least to a large extent, have been commandeered, and they are being used by many people. By many entities as a means to de-skill teaching, as a way to stratify schools. We're finding that the schools out here in LA are becoming resegregated because we have different classes of schools that teach different classes of kids.
Yeah, for me, when I hear charter school, I think privatize, profitize. I think it's a way of getting away from the compulsory public education system. And in many cases, it's not the case. But I look at New Orleans, where, as you pointed out, they have the most percentage-wise of charter schools. And right after Katrina, what they did is they just wiped away their public school system and said, now we've got all of these profitable education units. And to me, when I hear charter, I think privatize and profitize.
Well, and again, we here at UTLA, we represent several teachers in several charter chains, and it is chains, you know, like Target or Walmart or whatever. We represent teachers in several charter chains, and we're proud to do that, and we're especially proud of those teachers because that's a very oppressive environment where if you speak up, if you advocate for your kids, you stand a good chance of being shown the door. I'm a union teacher, but I've been a union teacher since I started my career. I never had to be Norma Ray, and because the union was already here when I started teaching. In the case of those teachers in the charters, they remind me of Norma, and most of them are women, they remind me of Norma Ray. They are people who looked around and said, this can't go on. And it's actually those folks, the ones who we have been able to organize, they're actually injecting a lot of new energy into teachers' unions, and we want to bring them in because when you have an industrialization model, when you have a profitizing model, you need the antidote of organized workers who can stand up for what's right.
And when I look at this report from UC Berkeley that says 50% leave the craft or leave these charter schools, that tells me that there's something seriously wrong with not just the environment but the entire model.
Absolutely. Well, Rick, what's happening is they don't, you know, it's funny because the charter schools, they talk about how their pay is comparable to, you know, being in a school district, being like a public employee in a school district. Well, the thing is that you very rarely get past your second or third year because they don't want teachers to be a consistent part of the kids' lives. The idea is to cycle them in, cycle them out, turn it into almost like casual employment. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to send my kid to a teacher who's casually employed any more than I want to send myself to a doctor who's casually employed.
Right. I look at the quote of one of the guys they talked about from Green Dot Public Schools.
Yes.
He's their chief executive. He said that, you know, he hires teachers in the 3 to 7 year experience range, and he's not going to apologize for that.
Well, is Marco? Is that Marco?
Yes.
Yes, Petruzzi, yes. Well, I suppose if someone's going to be clear and honest about their belief let me put it this way, if that's what he's going to do, that doesn't make it educationally sound, and it doesn't make it a logical place to send your kids, but I guess I'll at least give him points for honesty.
Yeah, because, you know, I got to be honest, I tried the teaching thing back when I was in college. I had started off wanting to get into education and, you know, the special ed part of it, and I did the whole, you know, first year kind of classroom stuff, and I got out of that real quick because I realized it was not for me. And I worry that, you know, the folks who are getting into those things are being pushed out by conditions that were laid out in this article, 80, 90 hours a week. I just don't know how you can do that.
You can't. You can't do it over the long haul. And people, the economy out here in California is very bad right now. And so folks are desperate. And our school district each year issues, you know, we have 40,000 teachers in Los Angeles. We're that big. And each year our district issues, you know, 3,000-4,000 pink slips to the teachers. And it's trying to always keep the workers on the defensive. And we have folks who are desperate. They have student loans to pay. And so they end up going to work in these oppressive and sometimes very anti-educational environments because they need the work. But their employers aren't interested. They're not interested in having consistency for the kids. They're interested in cycling through folks. It's an industrial model that dehumanizes the experience of a child in school.
Absolutely a shame. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're at Warren Fletcher, president of the United Teachers Los Angeles Union. They are in the LA Unified School District. Well, I'll get that out at some point.
Yes.
You know, I grew up in the 70s where in Cleveland, busing was the big thing.
Yes.
They thought that was going to be the cure-all. That's how we were going to fix the handful of failing students. Didn't work.
No.
I look at these vouchers, I look at the charter schools, I look at the privatization as the next step, like busing, that isn't going to work. But I think it's because they have no more ideas.
Well, I mean, and as long as every one of the ideas is this year's or this decade's version of the silver bullet, there are no silver bullets. There are no silver, and to the extent that they got smarter this time. When you talk about vouchers and you talk about using charters to privatize,
right.
They got smarter. They understand that there's not going to be a silver bullet. So if they can't get a silver bullet, they'll at least try to deunionize the environment. They'll try to crush the working people's voice so that even though they won't fix anything, it'll at least be easier and more profitable. Now, I would note that in Pennsylvania, you're looking at the bill that's pending.
Yep.
House Bill 1711.
Yeah.
That specifically would allow for-profit companies to come in now to be granted charters. And one of the things that we did in California, we knew that we were going to have to fight that fight early when those laws were coming into existence. And so, you know, it's like, what's the old Emerson quote? As the twig is bent, so will the branch be inclined.
Right.
And it's like, we made sure early on that we fought so that if you're going to hold a charter in California, you at least have to be a nonprofit organization. Now, nonprofit is a relative term. Some of them have figured out how to technically be a nonprofit but have a for-profit attached to it.
Yeah.
But it's really important. It is really important that as your General Assembly is considering House Bill 1711, that the people, that your listeners make sure that their members of the General Assembly know that they don't want to see the children of in Pennsylvania turned into cash cows, turned into ATMs for private organizations.
And we know that's what it's going to be. I mean, you look at we've got some charters schools here, like in Philadelphia, and you see some of the legislators who they have their parents named to the charter school, and their
Absolutely.
Family members who are sitting on the board collecting a nice lucrative salary. It's really a very incestuous relationship, and to me, it is the absolute wrong way to go. And going any further than we've already gone is just completely wrong. If there is no silver bullet, there's no golden ticket.
We teachers, we always say there's only four elements of real school reform, and that is smaller class size, higher teacher pay, fix the hole in the roof, and get out of the way.
Right.
Because in other words, it's like unless you're doing those four things, all you're doing is talking about models of money or models of management. You're not talking about the actual classroom and the actual lives of kids and teachers.
And for the handful of schools that are struggling in this state, they said there was, I think, 144 schools that were technically failing out of the 3,300. So you're talking about a slim number. I would argue that the problems in those schools are not the teachers. It's the environment. It's the economy. It's the fact that these kids probably come from poverty-ridden homes with broken families, and those are much bigger problems to fix than saying, oh, let's just beat up on teachers.
Well, and Rick, I want to thank you for saying technically failing, because the current system, and I'm sad to say the current administration with Arne Duncan as Secretary of Education, has set up a system that it seems designed to label as many schools as possible as failing. So it's a manufactured crisis. It's a made-up crisis. That doesn't mean that there aren't schools, particularly inner-city schools, that need tons of help and need it now. But when we talk about quote unquote failing schools, that's not about getting them help. That's about labeling schools to make those schools eligible for the kind of privatization scheme that people in Pennsylvania need to fight back against. And like I said, folks need to call their General Assembly members and let them know that House Bill 1711 can't just go flying through the General Assembly. We have to slow things down. This has to be about keeping children from being turned into ATMs for private companies.
I'm right there with you. Warren Fletcher, I appreciate your time. Thanks for the conversation and the information. I appreciate it.
Well, God bless you and have a good evening.
You do as well. Warren Fletcher, president of the United Teachers Los Angeles Union from the L.A. Unified School District. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Drowning in craft and lies. Save the USA and resume the ties and binds. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job and join the people.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
The core economic problem we're facing today is that both unemployment and underemployment are rampant, stifling any hope for real recovery and threatening the very survival of our essential middle class. The solution? Our leaders in Washington and various state capitals are pushing a massive jobs program across America. Great! Just what we need! No. Unfortunately, theirs is not a program to create jobs, but a coordinated effort with corporate front groups to eliminate hundreds of thousands of public service jobs, adding these workers to America's jobless hordes. If ignorance is bliss, they must be ecstatic. They've swallowed the right-wing mythology that prosperity will magically arise if only government budgets can be gutted and the jobs of public employees terminated. Yet, by going on a firing rampage, they are shoving the entire U.S. economy back into the Great Recession. Or worse. This is because people who are out of work do not tend to be, how shall I put this, robust consumers. Since consumer spending accounts for about 70% of our country's economic growth, and in so doing, creates America's jobs, the dogma of deliberately destroying the purchasing power of middle-class wage earners is disastrous, like trying to cure a headache by chopping off your head. Not content to undercut middle-class consumers by firing them, extremist politicos are also slashing jobless payments, food stamps, Medicaid, and other safety net programs. These put money directly and quickly into the consumer economy as recipients spend for food, gas, and other basics. Such cutbacks will drain some $37 billion more out of our consumer spending this year. This is Jim Hightower saying, as our economy keeps sliding backwards, the middle-class people who get knocked down will be hunting these laissez-fairyland ideologues with dogs. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John. Big John, Big John, Big Bad John.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go to our website and download our podcast. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can go and download the Stitcher app and take your class war on the go with your smartphone. Just look for the Rick Smith Show right there for your entertainment and enjoyment. Of course, if you want to email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com, I do answer all emails personally. I think about that frame for a second. The fact that there's no silver bullet, no golden ticket. There's not. The reality is when you're talking about education, things don't change. It's repetition. It's having things explained. It's that moment where, and I remember having these
light bulb,
these moments that where someone explained it and it was like
light bulb.
I got it. And it was because you had a teacher there to explain it, and they had the time to explain it, which, again, comes down to the smaller class argument. What's going on here with these budget cuts, you're going to start seeing larger and larger classes, and that means less and less individual instruction for kids. Now, they're selling the charters. They're selling the privatized schools as, oh, we can do that. We can get teachers to work for nothing, for 90 hours a week. But what do you end up having? Like this UC Berkeley report, 50% turnover. That cannot be fiscally sound because it costs a lot of money to train teachers. There's a process. It's not like, there you go, good luck. How's that working out for you? I don't know that I want my kids to have a first-year teacher right out of the box. I'd like to have them have a little bit of experience. But the folks who are deciding what's going on, to them it's all about... And I do believe there are some that really care. But I think for the mass, it's about the money. I think of the money that the privatizers handed to Hardy Williams just in his gubernatorial campaign that never stood a snowball's chance in Hades. But it was just about pushing that issue out into the mainstream, just pushing that out there and to get people used to it. And that's what the right does an amazing job of because they've got the money. They've got tons of money to push their agenda. And, it's just, float the trial balloon. It's just out there. Hey, let's talk about getting rid of Medicare. And then a couple months later, what are we doing? We're starting to get rid of it. We're starting to cut. We're starting to take away. Same thing with education, Jake. It's the exact same thing.
Well, when you talk about education, I'm sure you knew some teachers like this. When I went to school, some of the best teachers I know tended to be there a little while, tended to be really dedicated to their job, tend to have bought into the system, to have been around long enough to see the real benefits of a good educational system. When you have a system where you're privatizing and you have people coming off of the street that maybe it isn't their calling, I can understand why you have such a huge turnout. Teachers can very much, and I truly believe this, and this is why I get angry when they attack teachers. Teachers are very much underpaid if they're good teachers because they can absolutely turn the life of a child around and they can be their mentor and they can make a significant difference in pointing that child in the right direction that can benefit that child for the rest of their life. And I truly believe that.
I'm with you on that, but at the end of the day, And this is something that I've talked about often. You need to have that family structure. You need to have that home life that's stable. You need to come to school fed so that you can learn. You need to have some stability in your life and a parental structure that's pushing you in the right direction, which is why I would argue that probably the majority of the schools that they technically call failing are in areas that don't have that kind of stability. You have an economic problem where, you know what, maybe jobs would help. Maybe a growing economy would help. Maybe pulling people out of poverty would be a step in the right direction. But there are no silver bullets in this. You can't, and I remember where I grew up. Look, I grew up in a really crummy neighborhood. Half of the kids I went to school with, they didn't have the push that I had. They didn't have parents that, you know, you brought a report card home in my house that wasn't up to par. You got a little sore behind and everything else. Some people don't have that because their parents didn't have it. So it's more of a, we've got to spend more resources in the schools that aren't doing as well. Maybe after school, maybe weekends, maybe longer school years, maybe more intense, smaller classrooms. Maybe that's the way to go. And maybe bringing the parents in to participate as well. Make it a community thing. We haven't tried that, have we? What we're talking about is let's profitize. That's the answer. We're going to give parents the choice. Well, you know what? Maybe a handful are going to take care of it. Maybe a handful are going to benefit from it. But the rest of society, I do believe, is going to struggle.
You know, at the end of the day, the real problem, basic, and this is really coming down to where the bottom line, when you have for-profit schools and you're not making enough, where do you cut? How do you cut? You're talking about children's education. How do you cut down on expenses, Rick?
More kids
without hurting the quality of education.
More kids in a class. More kids in a class.
Well, most experts will say that is hurting the quality of education.
I argue.
And you're a sticker for that.
Absolutely, but that's the way you would do it. You load them classrooms up, you pay that teacher a little bit less. That's how you make your profit.
Or perhaps hire a lot of young teachers that you can start them in a younger. I mean, even in public schools, obviously, a first-year teacher, you start them with, you know, at a lesser salary. However, on basis, although I'm sure there's a lot of good first-year teachers, they lack experience, and do they have the quality of someone that's been there 5 or 10 years, and you have continuity, and the simple answer is no.
The experience part, and that's an interesting story. I was just talking to somebody yesterday, and they were talking about their daughter actually made it all the way through the third grade and could not read. They were reading by looking at the pictures. They were able to tell the story, understand the story by looking at the pictures, and somehow they just slipped through because they were able to basically fool an inexperienced couple of teachers. Who thought, well, you know, they're doing all right. They can do the math. They can, they're doing okay. On the middle moderate student. And the parents, he was saying, we did what we thought, but we weren't all that involved. As soon as third grade hit, the beginning of third grade, they got involved real quick. And then she graduated in the top of her class. I don't know that you really want that inexperience. I don't think that's a good thing. Now, on the other side of this, there are some teachers that, at the end of the career, they're just punching in, and those are things you have to look at. But this whole for-profit thing, not working for me.
That would have never happened when I went to school. Not that the dinosaurs were roaming the earth, but it wasn't that long ago. And we were forced. We were forced to stand up and read. I don't mean that in a negative connotation.
Not in first and second grade, you weren't.
Oh, yeah, we were. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yes, we were.
And if you had gotten a word wrong, the teacher would have...
My point is this. The teacher would know at what level you're reading. Any teacher that has any ability at all.
Well, this is what I'm talking about, inexperience. So thank you for making my point for me. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend Ellen Ratner from Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. We're right back after this.
For the rest.
West Elvis. Rick Smith.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Wake up in the morning, get to work and fight yourself. And then somebody tells you that you're over someone else. So what's it all about? It's money! Work it out!
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you so much.
So the big, as the soap opera continues, as the debt turns?
As the debt turns, yes. Well, essentially there was supposed to be a vote at 5:45, and as of when we're talking, no vote yet. A lot of discussion on the floor of the House. Back and forth, but no vote. And so I think they don't have the numbers, and that's why there's no vote yet.
Well, I think the Tea Party has pretty much drawn the line in the sand. They want collapse.
They totally want collapse because they think that somehow that's going to help America. I hate to say it, but this is what happens when you elect people who just don't have budgetary and other experience.
Or people who just don't have governing experience.
Right.
When you put ideologues in charge of governing, this is what you get. They ran great campaigns. They did wonderful jobs sloganeering. They did a great job of tearing down government and spewing hate language. But now you've actually got to do something. You got to do the job.
For sure. They're going to have a... And they're having a hard time because they just don't understand how Washington, not only Washington, how the country works and how economics work.
Yep. I remember I was watching the Chris Matthews thing with Mike Lee, who is a U.S. senator, doesn't really understand how to pass an amendment to the Constitution that they so worship.
Well, that'll be interesting because, of course, they say that after this bill, there's going to be the constitutional amendment on a balanced budget, and that's also going to.
Yeah, good luck on that. Good luck on getting 67% of the senators to vote on that. So I guess the Speaker of the House had a press conference today?
Yes. Well, they basically had several Republicans involved, and one of the things that came out of this presser was this issue. They said, you know, that basically that Harry Reid had three options. One was to bring the cut, cap, and balance, whatever issue, bill to the floor, which he has not brought to the floor.
You mean cut, gut, and punish?
Yes. Two was to essentially be the responsible person for the American debt failing and for us not being able to raise the money to pay our debts. And three was to take the bill that was essentially a compromise bill, Boehner's bill, and get that voted on.
Now, and Boehner's bill is no walk in the park, because we're going to be going back through this whole argument again probably sometime around December.
Well, that's exactly it. And the White House is saying, hey, December, you want to do that in the middle of Christmas? not a brilliant idea when people are going to get spooked about spending money, which is very important to our economy.
And, you know, what I look at is, you know, I look at, you know, the deadline is coming. We know they're saying it's August 2nd. There's some people saying maybe we got a week longer, maybe 10 days, who knows. But eventually, at the end of the road, the money dries up. There's nothing there. And if you want to just a preview of what that looks like, look at the fact that the Republicans in the House have not passed the FAA reauthorization bill. You've got some 90,000 people right now out of work. All of those federal projects, all of those infrastructure projects stopped. No money. We got mass layoffs now.
Right. Well, and not only that, but the issue is, of course, they're saying it's these large these airports that nobody goes to, but really the issue is unionization of workers in the airline industry and in the train industry.
And let's not forget FedEx. You know, this is part, FedEx is part of this whole deal. Delta's the big one. FedEx is the other part of this. They are happy right where they're at. And I keep saying if FedEx wants to stay under the FAA, they should have to put wings on their trucks. And the other part of this is when Jay Rockefeller is the guy standing up for workers' rights, you know something's bad.
Right. So I don't know what's going on there, but it's not pretty, and nobody's talking about it because all they're doing is talking about the debt. And at the White House today, I mean, they spent like 52 minutes just on the first row taking questions from them, and then he took two other questions, and that was it, and or three other questions, and so nobody even got around to the FAA thing.
Yeah, I mean, this is an instance where the media is really not picked up on it. I haven't seen any stories on it in that depth. But the reality is we've got some 90,000 people now unemployed, going to be collecting unemployment benefits, not contributing to the community, not contributing to the local tax base. And, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but over the last couple of months, we've had two instances where planes have run into each other in airports in this country. Which tells me that we need to be investing in our airports, exactly what this reauthorization bill would have done. But we have Republicans who have decided, no, we're not going to do that because we like to have the bill that we have where workers who don't vote are counted as no votes.
Well, yes, counted as a no. Crazy.
It's just nuts. And the other part, we're talking about more trade agreements, more job-killing trade agreements during another recession. I guess Ron Wyden had some conversation.
Well, Ron Wyden wants to make a deal where there would be essentially a clean trade agreement. The various Columbia and Korea and all that would be it would be clean. However, they would vote on it. However, they would increase the amount of weeks and availability for unemployment. Now, that part of the deal is good, but the question is, what are the real rules of this trade agreement, up and down, all that kind of thing? Devil's in the details.
Yeah, the trade agreements are bad. They're the same Bush agreements,
sure,
with some very minor changes, much like NAFTA was George H.W. Bush's baby. Clinton came in and put a couple of minor changes to make it
NAFTA
more...
Shafta, I call it.
Exactly. These are the exact same things, and the fact that now there's a Democrat, and I like Ron Wyden, I think he's a good guy, the fact that he's going to come out now and say, well, we're going to strip the TAA out of this, is a massive mistake. It's a massive capitulation, and again, the workers who are going to lose their job, I think, are going to get screwed again.
And it's going to go offshore and stay offshore.
Yep. Lastly, were there cookies at the Bachman press?
Well, you know, I wasn't actually there. We sent one of our staff people to it. But she did spend the first part of it simply talking back and forth, all about Ronald Reagan. And then she said she was not going to vote for the debt ceiling increase.
And she wasn't going to talk about gay therapy either.
Oh, no, that's her husband.
I guess part of it, she just wasn't going to talk about it. She,
right. No, I mean, she's saying, that's my husband.
Yeah, let him do it.
We decided to get in this together, but no, she won't talk about his business.
But what I was talking about yesterday's Tea Party rally where the Tea Twizzlers came out in the handfuls, and I said that the reason that there weren't any Tea Party people there is there were no cookies. So today there's a picture of Michelle Bachman with a whole bunch of cookies. So maybe she was trying to lure them out with the cookies.
Tea and cookies, what can we say?
Yeah, little pink doilies, the whole nine yards, just like my daughters play.
Huh.
Helen Ratner, I appreciate your time. Always great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Helen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Thanks, Rick. A story coming out of the Patriot News. We had talked last night about... Representative Terzai's plan to privatize. And in today's Patriot News, a little bit of the particulars have come out. House Majority Leader Mike Terzai, an Allegheny County Republican, is proposing taxing liquor and wine by the gallon. His plan would abolish a host of other taxes currently applied to liquor and wine, including a long-standing 30% markup, a $1.50 per bottle handling fee, and 18% Johnstown flood tax. The 6% state sales tax would remain under his plan. The gallon tax is common in other states. It also is lower in many states, and here are some examples. New Jersey leaves a $5.50 per gallon tax on liquor. Delaware stands at $3.75 per gallon, and Maryland imposes a tax of about $1.50 a gallon, according to Distill Sprint's council. It would be the highest tax in the country if it passes at the level he wants it, said Bill Patton, who's a spokesman for House Minority Leader Frank Dermody, who's a Democrat from Allegheny County. This bill is not going to result in many savings for the consumers. Retailers will still be making up the product to make profits, marking up the product to make profits. Alaska has one of the highest galvanized tax rates in the nation at about $12.80 per gallon of high alcohol content liquor. There is a risk of proposing high galvanized taxes. It could result in retailers bidding lower for liquor prices, according to spokesmen from the industry. Nathan Lasansky, who's a Pittsburgh area cocktail and spirits enthusiast and blocker, said he and many other industry insiders were surprised at the proposed galvanized rates. Certainly it's a big surprise to see this big a tax, considering Governor Corbett has put forth the idea that he's not going to raise taxes. On his blog, PLCB users group, Lasansky has crunched some numbers and found that under his Terzai's plan, there would be a shift in the tax burden from the premium products to value priced products.
So what's Grover Norquist got to say in all this? I mean, at the end of the day, this is raising taxes.
Good question.
What does our co-governor have to say? At the end of this, you're talking about destroying a state entity. We're going to privatize these liquor stores. We're going to tax the heck out of it. We're going to profitize the heck out of it. What's that going to mean?
That's technically it's violating his pledge. Just let me give you one figure. One more number just to show you how bad this is. It's hard for me to believe when you look at some of these particulars, just to give you an idea. A $12.49 5-liter box of Francois wine is currently taxed at $1.91. Now listen to these numbers, Rick. Under Terzai's proposal, the tax would be an incredible $10.90. That is an increase of about 700%. Now at the end of the day, he has some real opposition, not obviously among the Democrats, but also among the Republicans. And now it's apparent that some consumer groups and some of the people within the industry who use large amounts of wine and spirits are looking at this plan and saying, oh, no. This just isn't going to work. And then I didn't even get into the numbers.
He's proposing what you've laid out. That is the antithesis of a Republican plan. You know, that's something you would expect the Republicans to blame a Democrat for doing. You're talking about 700% increase. Is that what you said?
Yes, on a specific wine. In other words, he's going.
So how do you calculate it on a specific wine?
Well, according to this article, Terzai's plan goes on the amount of alcohol in a particular bottle. That's how he's going to change his system.
That sounds complicated.
Well, what it'll do, it'll put most of that tax burden on the vast majority of products.
So if I'm getting this right, and help me if I'm getting this wrong, the idea to privatize the liquor stores is to get government out of our lives and to privatize this because government can't do it, but we're going to pass some complicated, bizarre law on creating a whole new entity to oversee how much liquor is in something. Am I getting that right?
You said the right words, antithesis. You're exactly right. Under his plan, it looks like the consumers are really going to get stuck to him. And that's not even getting into his proposal. He has proposed issuing, 50% more licenses. And under his numbers just don't. According to him, when we figured that out last night, at $1 million a license, they would get about $1.2 billion. Now, Terzai's coming out with $1.7. I don't know where he's going to get that money. So when some of these legislators, even in his own party, look at these numbers and say, you know, your numbers just don't add up.
I thought it was $2 billion. Where's this $1.7 now coming from?
Those are the latest numbers that he put out.
So the latest numbers he pulled out of his backside.
Right.
Okay.
And last night I came up with the number by simply adding $1 million at the number of proposed licenses under the numbers that he gave would come out to $1.2 billion. Now he's coming out with, as you could say, $1.7 billion. I don't know where he's getting these numbers.
Well,
he's not going to come close. Yes, you're right. He's bending over
and
popping that baby right out.
There you go.
I don't think he's going to get anything close to $1 million for each one.
We. This is our asset. He's got no stake in this game. This is our asset. He's selling our property. That's the way it is. That's my liquor store. Those are mine. That's my investment. I'm a stakeholder in this business. Every one of us should have a say in whether you're going to start pulling nonsense like he's talking about.
The longer this goes, I think the more it appears that he's going to have a real problem getting this passed, Rick. If I could quick get into that FAA shutdown, and I know we covered that. Let me give you some quick numbers on over and above the $200 million, by the way. You and I are losing every week in income. The $2.5 billion is the total scale of airport construction projects on hold. The 4,000 is the number of FAA employees nationwide who are furloughed. 280,000 jobs, that's the number of jobs, would be created by passing a multi-year FAA reauthorization bill. And this I like, the zero. That's the number of other elections in our nation, whether for union representation, members of Congress, or on American Idol, that count non-participating eligible voters as having voted no. And what they're talking about is the Republicans are all upset because they want to change the election procedure for unionization attempts within the FAA. According to the old way was, when you had union elections, if a union member didn't show up, it was counted as a no vote. They want to change that to have the same rules apply that anyone else has applied when you go to vote. If you don't show up, it's not counted. They only count the votes for those who showed up, and that's the way it should be.
Absolutely.
That's democracy in action.
Yes. Yeah, remember when they brought the voting booth here, Americans for Prosperity? Joe, the unlicensed plumber, came, and they were fighting against the Employee Free Choice Act. Said, we should have a vote. Every vote should be counted, and blah, 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 blah. Even though they wouldn't let us vote. Kind of the same thing. Where's Joe, the unlicensed plumber, now? Nobody knows.
And where are the jobs?
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
On July 5th, 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law. It is also known as the Wagner Act after its chief sponsor, New York Senator Robert Wagner. Prior to its passage, Senator Wagner chaired the National Labor Board, created by Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 to attempt to bring order to labor-management relations. The National Labor Board consisted of three representatives from labor and three from industry, with Wagner as the chairman. It was here that Senator Wagner realized government assistance was required to level the playing field if labor unions were to effectively bargain with management. President Roosevelt said of the National Labor Relations Act, it should serve as an important step toward the achievement of just and peaceful labor relations in industry. industry. Hailed as the Magna Carta of labor, once the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law, workers were encouraged and protected to exercise their newly recognized rights to freedom of association, self-organization, and engage in concerted activities for the purpose of collectively bargaining through a representative of their own choosing in order to establish wages, hours, and conditions. Employer interference, such as threats and intimidation, firing, refusing to negotiate with the union, and discrimination for union activity were expressly prohibited. These illegal activities are described as unfair labor practices by the law. The impact of the Wagner Act on American life was substantial. The standard of living for American workers, their families, and communities was extraordinary. Unionization rates increased to a high of 35% of the American workforce as American workers demanded their rights. Working men and women finally had a unified voice to stand up and fight for dignity, respect, and safety in their workplace. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show. I give my head to the new constitution. Take a bow for a new revolution. Smiling green, teeth all around. Pick up my guitar and play. Just like yesterday. Then I'll get on my knees.
Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go to the website and download it. Or if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app and take your class war on the go. Also, you can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. So no debt ceiling vote. The Boehner plan was supposed to be voted on this evening. Has not happened. Guess it's not going to happen. What I find interesting is Bruce Bartlett was on Chris Matthews' show yesterday, and he was Reagan's domestic policy advisor, back in the old days. And what he said was, this myth that tax cuts are the key to the prosperity, not so much. He also pointed out that Reagan actually raised the capital gains tax, which I knew, but he didn't raise it all that much, but he still raised it. And he said, he's skeptical that Congress is going to be able to solve our crisis. He said, I think there's a point. There's nothing that can pass the House of Representatives. He said, and this is a Reagan person saying, I think a good chunk of the Republican caucus is either stupid, crazy, ignorant, or craven cowards who are desperately afraid of the Tea Party, and rightly so. So, again, there's this vision that these T-twits have some kind of massive power. And you look at their rallies, handful of people. Now, understand, when the big money starts pumping out again and they start waving the shiny thing in front of the shiny tea bag in front of people's face, the masses may come, which is why it's important to point out what's going on right now. And I gotta be honest, I agree with Bruce Bartlett. A good chunk of the Republican caucus is either stupid, crazy, ignorant, or craven cowards. One of those. I don't see anybody really stepping forward and going. John McCain tried a little bit when he was on Hannity last night, but he tried, not did. Tried to say, look, we got to get something done. There's got to be some sanity. There's got to be something that works. And you look at the T-Twizzlers. I look at this one guy, Joe Walsh, Republican from Illinois. And again, one of these people who are telling us how to lead the country can't seem to keep his own house in order. In fact, his ex-wife is suing him for about $117,000 in unpaid child support. Turns out he's in big time debt. He's got a 9-year-old daughter. Just decides, we're not going to pay it. Not going to pay it. Understand, members of Congress earn about $174,000 a year. That means he's somewhere in the top 5% of folks' salaries in this country. Amazing stuff. But these are the people that are leading us. A couple of quick stories that I found interesting and funny and kind of silly. There's a woman in South Carolina who was arrested because she was driving around in her pickup truck. She was arrested for breaking their obscenity laws. Evidently, in South Carolina, they have very strict obscenity laws. And this 65-year-old woman who, back in early July, was driving around in her pickup truck, stopped at the convenience store. The police chief pulled up and saw something dangling from her truck. And there they were, a fake pair of plastic testicles right there on the truck. The maximum fine for this offense, $445 for breaking the obscenity law. And I'm going, really? Not so sure I agree with that. Speaking of testicles, well, maybe not so much. A U.S. judge ruled today that we've talked about the proposed ban in the past. In San Francisco, they wanted to put a referendum on the ballot that would ban circumcision. And I'm one of these people, you know, you do what you got to do. That's between, you know, you, your doctor, whatever, your faith, whatever. But this judge said, no, we're not going to let you put that on the ballot. That is between doctors and their lawyers and all of that stuff. And, just leave it alone. Now, the other people said, we want to sue. And so that's where we're going with all this. And so as of this moment, there is no referendum on the ballot in California for circumcision. Ouch. Anyway, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, it's right there for your entertainment and enjoyment. I don't know if you saw this. Remember Breitbart, Andrew Breitbart, the right-wing radical? At least I think he's a radical. He made up this video of this Shirley Sherrard woman. Do you remember this?
Yes, I do.
Where he kind of did some creative editing, kind of with a whole message, trying to make her sound like some rabid racist. Well, she got fired, and a whole long thing ensued. They tried to give her her job back. She told them to stick it. They tried to give her another job. She told them to stick it. Well, she's going and suing Breitbart for defamation of character and a whole bunch of other stuff. The judge today ruled that, yes, the lawsuit can go forward. And this, I think, is going to cost him big time. I think the radical right is going to have to figure out how to funnel him a boatload of money. Because I remember watching the video, and I'm going, I can't believe this woman is saying this. Then the next day, when I saw the rest of the video, you go, wow, that's not what she said at all. This was just a little creative use of little sleight of hand. And if you remember, tried to make her out to be this rabid racist, when in fact she did everything she could do, bending over backwards to help this white family, because she's a black woman. And in fact, the family came forward and said, yeah, she helped us, all of her powers.
She went to the state capitol, I believe, several times with them. I remember that case. Well, Breitbart's kind of the darling of the right wing. I mean, I see him in TV and, he's hailed as a hero, and I hope he loses that, and I hope he loses it big.
Well, they're saying that, the suit's invalid because it was triggered by a matter of pure opinion, not a statement of fact. I'm going, look, you caused this woman some harm.
This guy's been doing this.
That's his shtick, man.
He did this before. You said it right. It's his shtick.
And, we worry about that here sometimes.
You play with fire, you're going to eventually get burnt.
Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, again, therickssmithshow.com. I want to thank everybody who came on the program this evening, especially our good friend Lou Prince from Vintage Vinyl. Look, we're not getting any ad dollars from him, but if you need CDs or albums, Lou is a great guy, runs a great shop over there, vintagevinyl.com. We've got a link on our site at therickssmithshow.com. It'll take you right over there. And thank all of our guests. Thank you for being here. Of course, our chief engineer, Brett, for moving the knobs and sliding the tubes. Have a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
It's coming. from the wind.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous rain. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get The Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.